Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
RacismDaily.com, your number one source for global news reports on race, racism, and overt actions of white supremacy. From Asia to the Americas to Europe to Australia to Africa, racism is not a thing of the past. It is our current reality. Be informed. Be globally informed. You should be the first to know. RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? CounterRacism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Do you need a one-stop shop for all of your multimedia needs? Triumphant Multimedia is a skilled team of professionals with a passion for great marketing and chic design. Our specialties include consulting, brand development, copywriting, and creative graphic design. That's second to none. We also offer photography, photo retouching, videography, and video editing. At Triumphant Multimedia, our goal is to provide highly effective creative solutions built to suit any individual need or budget. Give us a call at 678-732-8067 or check us out online at TRIMultimedia.com.
Hi everyone, welcome. This is Justice with the Cows Radio program. If you want to learn about, understand, and counter racism, white supremacy, be sure not to miss a Cows episode. We keep them jammed, packed with constructive information to sharpen your use of words to help eliminate the system of racism, white supremacy, ASAP. Also, to be able to invest in my counter-racist efforts, co-hosting the Cows Radio program, please visit my blog, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
New tonight, gay rights activists have tough questions about the brutal beating of a young man that went viral on the internet.
Those activists who stood behind Brandon White after the beating believed White was attacked because he's gay. But tonight, they revealed some new details about the motive behind the attack to CBS Atlanta's Tony McNary.
But guys, as you know, this case made national headlines. The video beating went viral before the victim, Brandon White, came forward. Now tonight, some of those gay rights activists who stood behind White and helped search for the men accused of beating him now say it was not a hate crime. They say the motive was revenge.
Brandon needs to come forward and make his wrong right.
Devin Ward is with Change Atlanta, a gay rights group. Ward and other members of Atlanta's gay community were among the first to speak out against the brutal beating seen on this video.
In the beginning, we thought this was a random attack because Brandon was gay or because of his sexual orientation.
The three men appeared to wait outside a grocery store in Atlanta's Pittsburgh community and then attacked 20-year-old Brandon White while yelling gay slurs at him. Ward and other members of the community stood behind White when he spoke out about the attack for the first time.
I have never seen one of those guys before. I've gone to that store plenty of times.
Several days after the attack, police arrested Dorian Morgan, Christopher Kane, and Darrell Williams. White told everyone he didn't know his attackers. That statement White made is now under scrutiny.
We were all duped, and it's a shame. It's a bitter shame.
Gary Nichols says he has since found out White does know some of the men who attacked him.
Brandon was basically agitating these young men about personally exposing them for being DL gay or having some type of DL gay down on a down low, possibly gay.
And Nichols says the men who attacked White know him and were after a video that's supposed to be on White's phone. You see one of the men grab it.
There's a video that was on Brandon's cell phone. And that's why the cell phone was a target. You know, they didn't just beat him up because he was gay.
Those who initially stood behind White now have doubt that this was a hate crime.
There was some prior actions between him and these other young men. And also, he really does know who these guys are. He really knows who these guys are. And I just feel like he absolutely lied to us.
Okay, we tried to contact Brandon White through his attorney, but I have not received a response. Atlanta police say no matter the motive, a crime still took place. Live in the newsroom, Tony McNary, CBS Atlanta News.
Context of white supremacy. Justice, Gusty Renegade, in for another program, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the broadcast. Today's date would be Thursday, March the 8th, 2012. So I have been told. We'll be back tomorrow. Mr. Edward Williams will be on the program. I believe this is his fourth visit, I think. Counter-racism.com. Lots of great counter-racist material. Excellent website. Been a long-time visitor. Counter-racism.com. You should have heard the commercial playing just a few moments ago. But he'll be with us tomorrow. Same program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Also, I hope folks are on their assignment. We're all supposed to be working to get 1,000 minimum, 1,000 less confused non-white people. The assignment for the weekend, the compensatory call-in this Saturday, that would be March 10th. Bring one person who doesn't normally listen to the program, one person that you think is a little bit more confused about racism, white supremacy. Bring them to the broadcast and have them dial in. They don't have to necessarily be with you. They can be at home or what have you, but get one person. If you can get more, that's great, but one person to dial in. And the reason behind this, we should all be working to get our 1,000. And a lot of this is just from the response from when we had Destiny on the program a few weeks back. That was the black female who did the video talking about different things that white people will say to try to make it seem like they're not racist. And a lot of people, they, you know, were really patient and they looked at it as an opportunity to contribute to decreasing confusion. Folks wanted to send books. People offered to get Dr. Welsing's book, Mr. Fuller's books, Dr. Marimba Ani's work. Anytime non-white people are not talking bad, talking down, name calling, that sort of thing, not doing that, but just looking to be patient and understand, hey, I was in this position too. This is what the system of white supremacy does. This is a part of our victimization, being confused about white people, being confused about white supremacy. What can I do to contribute to reducing their confusion? So bring one person who is a little bit more confused about racism and white supremacy. Bring them to the broadcast this Saturday. That'll give us more opportunities to refine our ability to have constructive dialogue when talking to someone who's a bit more confused, not getting angry, being patient, and doing as much as possible to eliminate their confusion. So that's this Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. The t-shirts, you can see the photograph, it's up on the blog. Please respect me like I am a white person. It's on the blog, racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com should be top of the page. You can see it. If you would like a shirt, $20, that will include shipping. We want to place the order on March 30th. So if you're interested in a shirt, I know lots of people have emailed in. If you would like a shirt, just email me your size, number of shirts. If you want to go ahead and place an order, you can do that. You can use the PayPal, but just make sure that you designate those funds for a shirt or shirts. Would like to place the order March 30th. The shirts, I think it should take not too long for the shirts to be printed up once we place the order, and they will be mailed out within 2 weeks of the March 30th deadline. So if you would like to participate in the counter-racist t-shirt experiment, check out the blog so you can see the shirt, and let me know if you would like a shirt. Looking forward to seeing the results. Broadcast for today, we have a non-white male, black male specifically. He has been listening for a while. He said he's been checking out the cows for some time now. He's familiar with guests and what have you. He was talking about things and people who were on the program some time ago. He called in on the broadcast with Mr. Cleo Monago last week. Mr. Monago actually will be on the program this weekend with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. They'll have an exchange of views on homosexuality and white supremacy. But our guest for today, he called in on that program and he talked about his son, who he says opened up and told him that he is a gay black male, quote unquote gay black male, at 16. And he shared a little bit about that experience on that program. He called back in to the compensatory call-in broadcast this past weekend and gave us a little bit more information just about some of his experiences, views on white supremacy, racism. Thought it would be an opportunity to learn, to hear more about his situation, what he's doing with his relationship with his son. He said that they have very open communication. They talk about everything, and I thought it would be an educational opportunity for us to hear more of his views and other aspects of racism, white supremacy that he touched on. He said he was in training to be a pastor as well, and then came to understand that white supremacy, racism has infected all of the religious practices on the planet. Again, as Mr. Fuller says, the religion of white supremacy, the strongest religion on the planet. Pleasure to have him on the program with us this evening. Looking forward to hearing his views and hearing folks if you all have calls or questions. Looking forward to hearing from you as well. Joining us live on the program this evening, Joe from D.C. Joe from D.C., are you on the line with us, sir?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Gus?
Intensely victimized, but glad you could spend some time with us. Can you speak up a little bit, sir? I want to make sure you're good and loud for us. Can you give us a sentence so I can check your volume?
Is this okay now?
Talk for maybe 30 seconds so I can double check.
I was born and raised in Washington, D.C. I was in the military for about 7 years. I was stationed in Italy for about 5 years. And then I was stationed in Washington, D.C. for 2 years.
Okay. That should work. If you're having volume problems, you can shoot me an email, but sounding clear to me, you should be good. Thank you again for sharing some of your time with us this evening. If you want to give us some more background information so folks will have a better idea of who you are and information that you're sharing with us, anything that you think would be good for us to know about you, please share.
Okay, I will do. First off, as far as from a religious standpoint, I felt as though I got the religious calling when I was young, but because I was kind of in the world, I kind of said, you know what, God, I'm going to wait. I want to go experience the world, and when I'm done, I'll go ahead and commit myself wholeheartedly. So, again, I served in the military for 7 years, and after the military, I came back home to Washington, D.C., whereas I completed my BA in Computer Information Systems, and I have a master's in business administration. after that is when I kind of decided, around about 2006, I was like, you know what, I'm ready. I'm about to go ahead and I'm going to do this. I'm going to commit myself to Jesus, and I'm going to, you know, be a pastor. So what had happened was, so what I did was I started studying everything. I did comparative religion between Islam to Christianity, Christianity to Judaism to Buddha. And once I started studying everything, I said, well, you know what? What is it that I want to teach when I become a pastor? And so I wanted to find a universal teaching. And within that universal teaching that I found helped me to understand that what individuals are learning is not what was truly written. And one of the things that helped me to have a background in religion is that I'm a Mason. I am a 32nd degree prince, and I'm a knight as well. And most people may not know knights. You can look at the Knights Templar. And whenever you hear the president or the pope being called a pontiff and everything like that, that's on the side of 32nd. So that's about as much history that I can pretty much give you on that side. Everything else you would have to Google on your own. So having that already Egyptian background, you know, within masonry, so when I started studying Christianity, I started noticing things that didn't sound right. And to maybe, let's say, to the lay person, they may not have caught that. So within studying that, I started writing papers. I sent information to Howard University. They never responded. I contacted other religious sites, organizations. They never responded. So then I went on blogs, and I started putting my information out there. I went to a mosque. I went to a temple for Indian. I actually went to every single different religious temple, a place of worship, to get a better understanding. And then I started looking at what they were teaching. And from that, I just, you know, from that, I became an atheist. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about was that, real quick, I'll go over, is that the universal teaching is something that I found out is education plus life experience equals wisdom, which leads to spiritual growth. Education comes from everything that you learn in school, as well as what you learn every day of your life from your family, your friends, also your enemies. Life experience is your own path that you walk in life, as well as the life experience that you learn from others that you meet in life where they work. And wisdom is that combination of the two intertwined throughout your life. And spiritual growth is that truth and knowledge that you gain. So then it breaks it down even further and says, well, you know what? Well, what's the key to life? The key to life is simple when you think about it. The key to life is all the decisions that you make in your life. So, and your decisions are normally based off of your education and your life experience. So in life, so what I try to teach is that never look at it as though you make a bad decision. There is no bad decision, because sometimes there's a worse decision than what you have to make. So every time you make a decision in your life, you always try to make an informed decision, which will be based off of either your education, your life experience, or both. So, and most people who study African history will know that wisdom was the goddess Isis. If you enter Greek, and most people that go to college, they enter Greek fraternities and stuff, it was Athena. And then you had Eve and you had Torah. But if you notice, even in the Bible, wisdom is her. It's a woman. It's knowledge. Knowledge is power. But most people, what happens is that when you're studying various cultures and religions, they don't teach you true knowledge, true wisdom. And most people, if you study John 4:23, 23, 24, there will come a time when we will worship the Father in spirit, truth, and knowledge. So what happens is that we miss that part. And then the final part to that is, if you were to draw a circle, and the circle would be you, on the outside of the circle would be your body, as well as, which is considered the ego. And most times when people say they're soul searching in life, a lot of times they try to change their outward appearance. But it's really not about your outward appearance. It's about the inside of you. So when you soul search, it's inward, not outward. And the And the more you delve deep inside of yourself is when you become in touch with your own spiritual being. You become in touch with, some people call it nature. If you want to believe in a higher power, you're in touch with a higher power. And if you ever notice that when you walk into people, you're like, man, I felt like I've been knowing that person their whole life. Because that's when two people are spiritually grounded or you in touch within yourself, you meet other people like you. So what you search for, that they tell you you need to go to a building and you need to pray, in reality is already inside you. The God that you are looking for is in you. And once you understand that, it relieves so much pressure on you. And that's what sometimes that they're not teaching. So what happens is that once you go through that soul searching, you have what is called a resurrection. A resurrection is nothing but going from your old way to your new way. So a lot of times that's not taught. So a lot of people suffer within themselves. Well, should I do this? Should I do that? But in reality, you know that you have the God in you because you have the voice already. Everybody has that little voice in their head that tell them right from wrong. And most times we don't listen to that voice. We go ask everybody else and their mother, well, what should I do? You talk to your pastor. You make all these confessions. But in reality, the God in you tells you right from wrong. We all have that. So you search for things that you already have. So when you understand that truth, that knowledge, you acquire that wisdom, and your spiritual journey through life becomes a wonderful experience. And so by learning that and understanding that they were not teaching that, it kind of just pushed me away. So for me, my awakening to understanding racism came through religion first to understand that they was teaching it wrong. And then from that, I started learning how religion was used to control the mind. And once you understand that if you can control what's on TV and if you can control what a person reads, you already know what a person's going to do. That's why we have the crazy rap. That's why we got all the crazy TV shows. And everybody wants to be like somebody on TV. I think that's about it, Gus.
Right on. We'll see if we can cover as much info as we can. I know folks will have questions and what have you from the chat room. Before we get started, number one, you are a black male, correct?
Yes.
Okay. This program, context of white supremacy, I have, you know the drill, I have concluded we are in a global system of racism, white supremacy. I use those two terms as synonyms. And I use the same definition for both terms. Definition is as follows. Global system of people who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to abusing and or subjugating everyone in the known universe whom they classify as not white. Do you believe that such a system exists, and do you think that's an accurate definition?
Yes, I agree with you 100%, and I can give you a prime example of why. If you look at the Bible, most people that's enlightened, they throw the Bible away. But in reality, you have to turn your mindset to look at the Bible and say, okay, but look at white people, and look at what happens in the Bible. And you can say, well, you know what? White people really do act like this. If you study the major person, the figurehead, the patriarch of all three major religions, it's Abraham. Look at all the atrocities. Look at the lion. Look at what he did to his wife. And then you think, well, you know what? White people do that. If you look at the subjugation of women, white people do that. If you look at them enslaving the Egyptians, leading them out of Africa in chains with their pants under their butt. Isn't that what they did to black people? So before we just 100% get rid of the Bible, we need to start looking at it as a blueprint of what they have done and what they will do to take over the world. Most people don't know, Gus, that Canaan is Palestine right now. And they told you what they was going to do. And they're doing it. But most times we're so caught up in it that we don't look at the knowledge and the wisdom that they already telling us what they're going to do. And we just miss it. That's why, if you notice, the King James Version never changed. And most people that are Masons, they know this already. Well, at least they should know it already. Let me say that. That's why it doesn't change. Because it's a plan. And I'm telling you the plan. It's simple. The plan is not hard. It's simple. The Bible is a blueprint of the white man taking over the world. And you have two types of Masons. You have one which is in Prince Hall, and you have one which is George Washington, your president. George Washington was an honorary member that they made. And if you come to Washington, D.C., in Arlington, Virginia, you have a big old temple, George Washington Temple. And it's not hard. The plan is right there in your face. You have to just choose to want to really learn it and accept it.
Wow. Right on. We will get to it, see if we can cover as much information as we can. Before I even get to any questions, Joe from D.C., he dialed in yesterday when Pam was on the program, TrojanHorse1.com. He dialed in, and he had two questions for Pam, and he was bummed that he didn't get to ask his questions. I know some other people dialed in. They didn't get to ask their question either. We had a lot of people on, and it was very constructive broadcast, in my view. Check the archives. Always great to have Pam on. And I told Pam that you had some questions, that if she had time and thought it would be constructive to dial in and you could get your questions in today. And I do see her on the switchboard. So we will start where we left off at yesterday. If you want to ask your questions, Pam is on the line. You can hear us, Pam?
Yes, I can hear you. Good evening to everyone, to your guests, and to you, Gus.
How you doing, Miss Pam?
Okay, how are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
If you want to ask
ready,
your...
All right, yes, I'm ready. Miss Pam, I had two questions, one dealing with the child support issue and one dealing with the drug situation.
Okay.
And growing up, and I'll talk with the drug situation, growing up in the inner city, a lot of African-American men sold drugs. Of course, in most inner cities, most African-American men sold drugs. But what they never talk about to me is that the person that I've seen benefit the most from the money is African-American women. And then so I started a survey asking African-American women, well, do you think that y'all should bear some responsibility because the majority of the money go to you? Most of the brothers pay for their college. Most of the brothers help them with their apartments. If they had kids, they take care of everything. But they bear no responsibility when the guys get locked up from selling drugs. They either move on to another drug dealer or they go on with their life. So I wanted to get your perspective on what you thought about black women playing don't understanding that they do play a role in brothers selling drugs. Whether or not they may not control them, you don't stop him or make him do it, but by taking the money, you help to perpetuate the problem. That was the first question, and then would you like to answer that, or you want me to ask both?
Yeah, maybe you better hit me one at a time.
Okay.
Yeah, you better hit me one at a time. Do I think black women should take some of the responsibility for black men selling
drugs?
That's the question.
The reason why I'm saying it is because they benefit from it. Yes,
because okay.
from my perspective, growing up in the inner city of Washington D.C. Mm-hmm. They were some of the main individuals that profited from the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the time, brothers were selling drugs to get that beautiful woman because they wanted the guy that had the fresh clothes, the fresh car. He had money. He could buy me this. He could do this. It's the same thing when you're looking at guys as athletes. They went from drug dealers to athletes. They want the guys with the money. He can do this for me. I need a man who can buy me this and buy me that. If not, I'm going to kick showing the left.
Okay. Well, my response to that is because when you phrased the question, my first thought was who gets the most out of the drug? It was the people that created the drug industry. Drug selling in the black community is an economic problem. Black women are poor. Black men are poor. Black women sell drugs. Black men sell drugs pretty much for the same reason. They took the jobs out of the community. I personally don't think it serves any purpose to view it as how much is black men's fault, how much is black women's fault, when you're in a system where you wouldn't sell, you wouldn't have a single drug to sell if it wasn't for the white people in charge. The white people bring the drugs into the community. The white people create the drug trade. They create the drug trafficking from border to border, the drugs that are exported and imported over, you know, via the planes and boats, the assault weapons that came along and somehow wound up in the hands of 15-year-old black boys. I think the focus, no disrespect, but I think the focus is not constructive. Two poor people trapped in the inner city, given false values of materialism. Jobs gone, schools inadequate. I don't think either one is at fault in terms of the drug trafficking. I think they're both victims in a system that took away their ability to earn an honest living. First, it didn't prepare them to earn an honest living via the school system and dysfunctional neighborhoods, and then it turns around and takes the jobs. I watched in Chicago how the jobs started, jobs that poor black people used to do. I watched them bring in illegal immigrants to do those jobs. And my sister said something about it 20 years ago, and I wasn't really paying attention. What they would do is they took the jobs literally out of the poor black community, and they brought drugs in. And so, yeah, some black men sell drugs because they want to impress women. But, you know, they also sell drugs because they want to buy rims. They want to put, you know, jewelry in their ears and gold in their teeth. I mean, if I focused on the stuff that poor black people are doing, I'm wasting all of that time and effort that I should be focusing on the people that created the drug trafficking. So, yes, some brothers sell drugs, but should black women take responsibility for them selling drugs? I just don't see that being constructive personally, because it's two people trapped into a cage, and now each one's trying to figure out who's taking up more room in the cage or who's eating more food in the cage, or who's stinking up the cage, instead of focusing on the people that put them in the cage. So do I personally take responsibility? No. I know black women that sold drugs. And I also know black women that have gone to jail because they sold drugs. And I know black women that went to jail because they dealt with a drug dealer. So black women are sitting back in the cut enjoying caviar and champagne while the brothers go to jail. That's not what's happening. They're both trapped into a society that victimizes both of them. And the black, if you want to talk about look at the whole picture, when the guy goes to jail, she's got to figure out a way to feed the kids. So it's no point in them blaming each other for the system. That's my only point.
Okay. I understand your point 100%. And like I said, it was just one of them things that I wanted to get your perspective on. And the other question that I wanted to get your perspective on, and it's kind of a what if, and the reason why I'm asking this what if question is because as a man, an African American male who has gone through the child support system, my understanding, and I'll speak for my understanding, was that my only choice was to either A, not have sexual intercourse with my son's mother, or wear protection and hope for the best. And if she got pregnant, then it was her decision to choose whether or not to have the baby. So then my question to you is, what if a law was passed that if a woman knowingly has a child from a man that knows that he do not want to have a baby at all, do you think that that would help adjust the situation of people having kids knowing that the father may or may not want to be around?
You know, it's funny because I had the same similar conversation many, many times, but I had the same similar conversation about 3 days ago. And my thinking is this. First of all, you're talking about a biological issue. I personally would love to pass a law where men and women both have wombs, and it's a crapshooter who gets pregnant. And I think that would put things in perspective. The bottom line is, every guy really over the age of 18, 19, whatever, knows if he has sex with a woman, particularly if he doesn't use protection, she can get pregnant. At that point, the ball is in her court. Now, if he doesn't want to be in that court, then he has to protect himself. It's just like me. If I go down the street and I'm wearing a super short skirt and I know that there's a rapist around the corner, now I have to make some decisions. Knowing there's a possibility I might get raped, now I got to make some decisions. me getting raped is not my fault, but I also know there's a situation consequences. So what I'm saying is, yeah, it would be nice if you could somehow take the womb out of the woman and split it up. But the bottom line is, if she gets pregnant, it's her body. That's really a biological problem or issue. It's her body. She makes a decision to have the child or not. If a guy doesn't want to have a child, then it's his responsibility to decide for himself whether he is going to have sex with that person or have protected sex and no sex at all. That's his responsibility. Once that child once that egg is fertilized, and I keep telling guys, because I had this conversation all the time, I keep telling guys, the woman can't make herself get pregnant. If that was the case, you wouldn't need fertility drugs. The woman cannot control the pregnancy at the time of inception. If that sperm meets that egg, that is purely fate, luck, or whatever you want to call it. She can't make that sperm fly into that egg and fertilize it. She has no control over the fertilization process other than refusing to have sex. The guy has no control over the fertilization process other than choosing not to have sex with her. Once that baby, however, is conceived, it is her body. The guy can't expect to claim equal rights over her body any more than a man would allow us to decide whether he has a vasectomy. I can't make a guy not have a vasectomy because it's not my body. He can't make me get an abortion because it's not his body. However, he does have the responsibility. I hear you chomping at the bit over there. He does have the responsibility, knowing that there's a rapist around the corner, to decide whether or not he's going to go around that corner. It's so clear cut to me that the only victim, in my opinion, brother, is the child, because now the child's got a lucky parent. The man is, the woman gets pregnant, he's not a victim. The woman that gets pregnant, she's not a victim. Okay, let me ask you this. If I have sex with a guy and I'm not protected and I didn't want to have a child and he did and I got pregnant, would it be right for me to get mad at him and say he made me get pregnant?
No, I agree with you 100%. And one of the reasons, and I give you some more history, one of the reasons why I asked the question is because me and my son's mother had an agreement.
Okay.
And in that agreement, within the agreement, she decided that, you know, she wanted to take me for child support.
Okay.
And it took me, and I'm not proud of this, it took me a year to get over the whole situation to say, well, you know what, it's not about me. I still need to be there for my son. And it is something, and I know a lot of brothers who go through this who end up in child support who was trying to do the right thing and still, you know, end up in child support. And those were some of the reasons why I asked the question. And I always try to say from my perspective. So I don't want to say that this is something that I've seen universal. So for me, it took me almost a year to swallow my pride and say it's about my son, that even though I may keep my son mother, I may want to throw her under the bus or whatever, I still need to be there for my son, and I can't disrespect my son mother. So for me, when I'm around her, I don't disrespect her. I watch my word. I never badmouth my son to his mother. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, when we talk about it, my son came to live with me. He left his mother and came to live with me because but I'm not going to lie, it was hard. It took a lot of, like I said, a lot of soul searching within me to really understand everything. And even now, like I asked questions, some things I still don't get and I don't understand. But that's why I'm glad we got the show so we can discuss it. Hello?
I'm sorry. I was just saying, I had a friend, a good friend of mine, who found himself in a situation, sounds maybe similar to yours, where he was just messing around with this young lady, and he didn't even want to date her. After a couple of weeks, he didn't want to date her. Unfortunately, she got pregnant within those couple of weeks. And so they've had this contentious situation, him paying child support and this and that. And I tried to put myself in his shoes. I said, man, that really is messed up to maybe have had a few, you know, couple of encounters, sexual encounters, and now this woman that you can't stand is the mother of your child, and you're wedded to her for the next 18 years, and paying child support can't be much fun. I understand that. And being in a situation like that where you really, oh, the child is in the middle, you don't like the mother, you resented this and that. And I understand that's not an easy thing. I mean, me being a woman, I've never experienced it. And I'll tell you the truth, a lot of women who are supposed to pay child support, they're no better at paying child support than the men. They, matter of fact, I think they're worse because child support has a male face on it. And I think a lot of women think, oh, I shouldn't be paying child support. So I know guys that they so women don't want to pay it either. So if you flip the script, we'd be just as ticked off and irritated about paying support to a man living in a separate household. It's one thing to take care of your child and your child is in your household, but when you feel you're paying money to a child in somebody else's household, especially if you can't stand that person, that's got to be a trip. But the whole thing is, as far as the pregnancy, Mother Nature made that decision that we would carry it. And like I said, if I had my way, I'd make it a crapshoot where you roll the dice and you lay down in the bed and 50-50 chance that one of you is going to be pregnant, male or female. And I bet you money, a lot of guys wouldn't be chasing behind us. They'd be running from us. We'd be the ones talking, come on, baby, come on. You know, can you give me a little love? No, leave me alone. And it'd be the men as the shoe on the other foot. I would just, did you ever see that Cosby Show where the men got pregnant?
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, and they were walking around with their stomachs big, and they were really, it was hilarious. But anyway, unfortunately, it's just not an equal situation. That's biology. But I do understand that a lot of men who want to be fathers or who, not bad people, the child support thing is just such a contentious thing. You know, it's just such a, and I, you know, honestly, now think about it this too. Look at what the system does. I've watched the system be very unfair toward the fathers. Now, I think the men should pay. Don't get me wrong. But I've watched
that word fair.
Oh, I'm so sorry. God, it's such a habit. I've watched the system be very unjust toward the fathers. And I've watched it especially, I don't know how it does with white fathers. And so I started thinking maybe it's deliberate. Maybe they deliberately make the whole issue of child support so contentious and hostile as another way to keep the black families fractured, as another way to keep black men and women pitted against each other. So it could be that the system, other than the fact that they don't want to have to pay for these children, it could be a way that the system is deliberately making it such that it's just really bitter, a bitter experience for the males. Because the black woman didn't make the laws.
And I agree.
Yeah, the black woman didn't make the laws. You know, so I watched some of these things play out, and I'm thinking, like, wow, they act like they want these two people to be enemies. Maybe they do. But I hope I answered your question, so I don't want to take your show over.
Yes, Ms. Sam. Hey, thank you for answering my question.
Okay. I'm going to listen now.
TrojanHorse1.com. Visit the website. TrojanHorse1.com. Watch that word fair, listeners. We talked about this, Joe and myself, we discussed the questions he wanted to ask Pam before the program. I told him I was hoping he'd get an opportunity to do so today, but my quick 2 cents before we move forward, Dr. Welsing, throw away children, being reckless, careless with the bedroom activities. And then the Joe, I think when she was on the program in December, we were talking about Jerry Sandusky. That's what happens when you have throwaway children and black people are irresponsible about having fun in the bedroom. Jerry Sandusky, that is the winner. It's not the black woman. It's not the black male. It's not the black female that benefit from all that. It is Jerry Sandusky and company that benefit from all those throwaway black children that end up in foster care and end up with Terry Kelleher, admitted racist and admitted homosexual, who has an adopted black male child that he got from the womb. Those are the winners. Racist man, racist woman, as usual. Context of white supremacy. Mr. Joe from D.C., I guess went right back, same situation. You mentioned your child that you have.
Yes.
Your son, who's 19, the very first time that you called in was when Cleo Monago, black male, was on the program, I believe, last week, and you were sharing that your son, that he informed you when he turned 16, he informed you that he was quote-unquote gay, And you said you already knew that. It was no shock to you. And you pretty much, or matter of fact, you said your son, he said, Dad, I have something to tell you. And you said, what, you're gay? And he said, yeah. What were you seeing? What was your son doing in the time that he was with you before he, you know, came out and admitted this? What were you seeing where you thought my son is quote unquote gay?
Well, one of the things I did that a lot of people may not notice, if you remember back, I stated that I had gay neighbors. So what I did was I was like, you know what, I really don't understand this whole homosexual thing, and I don't really know why people get it. So I'll give you a brief history. My first encounter with a male making a sexual advance with me was when I was in the 12th grade of high school. The second encounter is when I was a freshman in college. And both times, the men were just straight. They was cool. They was laid back. And, you know, as a guy, you go to each other's house to hang out. And in high school, he approached me. And in college, he approached me in the dorm. And I wasn't evil or anything. I was just like, hey, man, you know what? We can stay friends, but I don't roll like that, and I love women. So after that, I sat down, and I just, you know, I was like, man, well, what is it that you like? Did you know you was like that when you was 10? So I got as much information as possible from guys who were in the lifestyle. I mean, my neighbors were guys that were hardcore buffs, and you would never know unless you was with them. Then I even talked to guys that were drag queens. And I got as much information as possible. So in hearing that, when my son displayed certain signs, like he was extra feminine, I was like, man, toughen up. Stop acting like a girl. But he was always just had a kind of female thing going on. And it's really hard to explain it. It's like I love women, and I had them around a lot of females. I mean, you know, I introduced them to women I was dating. I was like, you know, talk to women. I helped try to, you know, push that way. But for some reason, he just wasn't feeling it. So in seeing that, I started seeing little traits that a lot of the guys told me. They would do this. They would do that. And I noticed certain things. So when he told me, it was kind of like, okay, I already knew. No big shocker here.
Go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead. My bad, go ahead.
So from that, once I saw that, so then my next move was to say, okay, I have friends. Let me introduce them to one of my friends that I know who is my neighbor. And he came and talked to my son, and I said, you tell him everything. You talk to him about the lifestyle. Let him know the pluses, the minuses, and everything. And I actually left the room. I said, whatever y'all talk about, stay between y'all the two, and I want you to tell him everything. But this was somebody that I have known over a two-year period, so I actually trust him to give my son the best information. And one of the things that he explained to me was that, Gus, is that he didn't deal with men looking at feminine-looking at men. He dealt with men that had girlfriends. And so as we call undercover brothers, he dealt with only undercover brothers. So if you wonder why a lot of the community in Washington, D.C. is heavily populated with, you know, AIDS and everything else, is because the brothers here go hard. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to educate my son about what was going on in the community. Because they taught me, like, dude, see this guy right here? See the guys in the neighborhood? Yeah, they all come over when you're not looking. And they were very, so if you sit down and talk to someone, they're very candid about what goes on. And so I took that information and tried to do my best. If my son, I was hoping my son wasn't, you know, in that lifestyle, but when I found out he was, then I took charge of trying to educate him as much as possible. But the first thing I had to do was learn as much as I could about the lifestyle, because I'm not in it. I don't know about it, so I got people to teach me about it.
Fascinating. Wow. Do you have any suspicions? Just based on what you shared about many of the so-called homosexual black males in your area of the world, them having a sexual interest in other males who are involved, sexually involved with females, did you have any suspicion that your son may have been approached by a male at a young age?
As far as I know, from what we talk about, he's never been sexually assaulted. He's never been molested or anything like that. It's something that he just decided within himself. He said he tried men. He tried to date women, you know, first, and it's just not something that he can afford. He tried men, and that's what he preferred. I even talked to him about, hey, won't you try dating women? And he was like, I tried it. I didn't like it. This is what I prefer. So I didn't try to browbeat him over the head. I was like, okay, if that's what you prefer, then let's talk about it. So then we talked about everything that you would talk about with a guy. So in a sense, Gus, my conversation with my son is almost half of it is like I'm talking to him like he's my daughter, and the other half is like I'm talking to him like he's my son. Because within that community, you know, you have people that can go one way, which they can be a bottom, they can be a top, or they can be both. So you have to approach both areas. So it's almost like I have a daughter, got to talk to her about that, and a son, I got to talk to him about that. So, and then, you know, we talk about protection. I bought him a whole bunch of condoms. I bought everything. I was like, I can't stop you from doing what you want to do, but I'm going to make sure you prepare it and everything, and that's what I did.
Wow. Riveting.
So I asked questions about how was your first time, how did you like it, you know, the same thing, because, see, I look at it from the standpoint of, Gus, I can't change him. If that's the lifestyle that he chooses to live, even if I don't agree with him, he's still my son, I love him, and I support him. And I always told him, you have to be your own man. No matter what lifestyle you pick, you have to be your own man. The other thing I taught him was that everybody's not going to like your lifestyle. And you can't expect everybody to like your lifestyle. So before you open your mouth and say something, you need to make sure that you're comfortable within yourself, again, you know, the soul searching within yourself, and then make sure that whoever you talk to, you can kind of trust that person to keep your business within them. And it's not so much about being an undercover brother. It's just about, I don't think you should tell everybody your business, because everybody don't always have your best interest. And we both know that whether they're black or white, you stay or gay, not everybody has your best interest. So in teaching that, you know, I'm always still teaching the same thing. I, you know, always brought my son up about learning about black history and everything like that, how hard it is for a brother. And now he got it on both sides. It's hard, I'm assuming, for that particular lifestyle as well as being a man, a black man. Because at the end of the day, you're still a black man. It don't matter what side of the fence you try to straddle, you're still a black man.
You, I believe on the Saturday, this past Saturday's program, when you were given more information about the situation with your son, you indicated that you were in the military and that you didn't have contact and or custody with your son until he was 10. Is that accurate?
Yes. My situation, like I was telling Pam, is a situation where that, man, I didn't find out my son's mother was pregnant till 3 months after we broke up. Only because me and her sister went to school together. And all this information, I've already told my son. Like, every single thing, when my son came to live with me, I told him everything. What happened between me and his mother, I teach my son. I gave my son the child support paperwork. I've given him everything. So I felt as though in order to earn his trust, we have an open dialogue about everything, bills, you know, job stuff, sex stuff. Everything you can think of, we have an open communication about it. So when I was in the military, you know, he learned later on that I wanted him to come live with me, but it didn't work out that way. So when I finally came home from the military, me and his mother had made an agreement every other weekend and the whole summer, because I was in school full-time and working. But eventually that did not work for her, so she decided to take me to court for child support. And again, she had her reasons. And, you know, she had her point of view, and I have my point of view about the situation. But in the end, that's what happened. So then it took me, like I was saying, almost a year of hurt to get over. Because what happened is, Gus, my son, it was for the Christmas, New Year break. My son was here with me for Christmas. We did New Year's. He left on January 2nd. January 3rd, two African-American women knocked on my door and served me court paperwork. The day I went to court was the day I got a brand new job. I had to get the court date on a different day. and I had to use proof that I got another job. So what happened when I went to court for the case, they didn't take the amount that I was making. They took the amount that I was going to be making. So they awarded her, and I don't have a problem saying, they awarded her $800 a month and $32,000 in arrearage. Now you say, wow, that's a lot of arrearage, because initially she told me my son wasn't mine. But that doesn't matter. And when I was taking care of him, I didn't think I had to keep receipts for my son. Who keeps receipts for their son? You doing stuff, you take care of your kid, that's it. But because when I went to court, I didn't have a lawyer and I didn't have receipts, they gave her everything. And I had a white judge, a male, both times. Actually, I get the same white male judge every time I go. And actually, I go back to court, even though my son. So what happens is in Washington, D.C., the age of an adult is 21. So now my son lives with me. So that means he's only 19. So that means now I can take his mother to court for child support. I personally don't want to do it. We both broke and poor. Nobody got no money. But because she don't want to stop, we have to go play the game some more. So that's how it goes. So he's aware of all this. Actually, my son is in the house now listening to me. So, again, I don't hide anything.
I'm sorry.
All the way up the show. Know about. Say that again.
You said your son is your son listening? Oh, is your son is listening to the program?
Yeah, he's listening.
Oh, okay.
To me. Can hear me.
Right on.
So yeah, again, we opened. He didn't want to be on the show, but he said, you know, he'll listen, and he listened to me, and I'm not really saying anything that he hasn't heard already. But I did talk to him before I came on the show. I talked to him about it. I let him know some of the stuff that we discussed. I told him that I'll be on the show, and I want you to listen to it so you can hear everything. He was like, okay. But he didn't want to be on the show, but he didn't have a problem listening. Again, hide anything. We real open, and I think that's just kind of the best way to be. You know, whether your kid is straight or in the lifestyle.
Context of white supremacy. I guess to your knowledge, number one, do you think the lack of contact that you had with your son for that first 10 years, do you think that might have had any impact on him being quote-unquote gay?
That I can't say 100%, but I can say that it has had an effect on his education. So if you look at it from an educational standpoint, then yes, I can say that it has had an effect. Lifestyle, he probably would have maybe held it in a lot longer. And probably maybe told me later on in life instead of telling me at an early age. So it's kind of hard to say. But I know from an educational standpoint, it affected him.
How so?
And one of the things that I want to talk about is that because when you deal with child support, once the money goes to the parent that has the child, you can't tell them to set up a college fund. You can't tell them to put them in a private school or anything. So whatever that other parent does with the money, it's it. So my situation is, Gus, I paid all this child support. Now, guess what? My son lives with me, so guess who got to pay for school now? Me. So I paid, and I'm still paying. So it takes a lot of internal soul searching to not harbor ill will towards his mother. But, you know. You do your best to get over it.
Context.
And I'm still trying to get over it. I'm sorry.
No, well, that is not a problem. Context of white supremacy. I will say again, I've heard Mr. Fuller say this, and I guess for tomorrow, Mr. Edward Williams. Really, black people, one of our major efforts has got to be not getting in conflict with each other and then having to go and rely on white people to resolve the problem. That is just the worst, because white people, they are not going to make the situation better. Anytime you have to go to white people to fix a problem, it is only going to be worse. That's going to be lose-lose for all of the non-white people involved. The only people who are going to benefit from that will be racist man, racist woman, racist child. You can guarantee that. I also wanted to make sure I asked, because the whole the Brandon White situation, we were talking about this with Kunango. 19 now, has he ever reported to you that he's been mistreated by other black people because he's so-called gay? And we talked about this before, mistreatment above and beyond what a black person would experience anyway under this system. Has he ever had reported any of that sort of mistreatment to you?
No, not that I know of. The only thing that I know of that he's told me about is basic relationship stuff. What happens is, and one of the things I talk about is that when you're in a lifestyle and you're at a young age, if you don't have a family home front, you meet a lot of predatory people, just as the same as if you would meet a young girl with an older guy. That's what you face a lot of. And a lot of the older guys take advantage of them. So because I was around, I think we was able to avoid a lot of that. But he do date older people. So we have to talk a lot about older men and the mindset of older men.
When you say older, like how much, what age are we talking?
Yeah, a lot of times you meet younger people that's, 25 and up coming at them. Because my son, I'll explain it to you like this. My son, the way I was able to be able to deal with it is because my son is not flaming. And it's something that I explained to him. He's not running around twitching and switching and talking like a little girl. So because he's not doing that, he's what they consider a low-key brother, somebody that you can talk to, and he'll keep your secret in a sense. So if you are with a woman, you can take him around and be like, yeah, that's my man, and nobody have a problem with it because you can't tell unless he tell you. You understand what I mean?
Okay. I'm just trying to get so I have a clear picture. Is it anyone trying to talk to your son sexually? Are any of these males are they over 30?
Yes.
Over 35?
Yes, the dating thing doesn't change. Older men chasing young girls, it's the same. That part doesn't change. It's still predatory dudes out there on no matter what side of the aisle you are. Yes. That's something we talk about all the time. Yes, it doesn't change. Like that, the dating stuff doesn't change. Like, yes. But so that's one of the reasons why, Gus, I said half the conversation is I have to talk like he's a girl. The other half, I have to talk like he's a guy. And the girl part comes in dealing with older predatory dudes. You have to look out for them.
Is there a lot of this? Like, guys that are 35 and up? Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So that's one of the reasons why, when you have your kids, if you can get them to stay in school and work, like anything, when you have young kids, the more activities you can keep them in, the easier it is to kind of manage some of the stuff and help them grow. The less you are supportive of your child and what they're going through, the more you actually help them to go into the crazy stuff. And what I mean by the crazy stuff is my neighbors, they will go to a lot of parties, they will get drunk, use drugs, and have all kinds of orgies and stuff and come home. And that's how most of my neighbors had AIDS, because they used to have those kind of parties. But they didn't have the family structure. A lot of them were kicked out by their mothers and fathers, so they all just lived in the house next door to me for a long time. I mean, Gus, when you can see it was out of control, it was out of control. And I'm not saying all men that's in the lifestyle are out of control. What I am saying is that men that's in the lifestyle who may not have the family background stand a greater chance of falling down the wrong path. But that's with anybody. It's not just people in the lifestyle.
I will double check, see if Justice, if she has some questions. I'm going to give out the number. If you want to call in, if you want to ask Joe from DC questions, the number to dial
760-569-7676. And the code is 564-943-pound. And I'll check the phone lines directly. I will also, I'll make sure before I hit Justice to mention, because AIDS has been mentioned a couple times, I am not a doctor. However, we have had Dr. Nancy Turner-Banks and Mr. Curtis Cost. He was just on Cree's program as well. They are both Black authors. Dr. Nancy Turner-Banks, obviously, doctor, medical. They both strongly have asserted that all of the claims about AIDS and HIV causing AIDS, that is not true. They have both written books on that and have said that a lot of this is simply racism, white supremacy, and greed, really. We can make a lot of money saying that there's a disease that exists that does not, and we can practice racism at the same time and say that this disease came from Black people and that Black people are infected with this. Dr. Nancy Turner-Banks, she was on the program September 2010. Her book, AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, The Deadly Violet Virus of International Greed. Mr. Curtis Cost, his book, Vaccines Are Dangerous, A Warning to the Global Community. But they both are making the same point in their book that that all of the HIV stuff is malarkey and racist malarkey to boot. Justice, if you have some questions you would like to ask our guest, Joe from D.C., your line should be open. Please proceed.
Greetings, Joe.
How you doing, Mr.
My first... I'm doing fine. just to start off, when I say anti-sex, I just mean so-called gay or homosexual. So basically, male-male, female-female, but sexually. So, my first question is, you know how old your son was when he went to go live with you?
He was 18. Did you hear me, Justice?
I'm sorry?
My son came to live with me when he was 18.
Okay, 18. Okay. How did your son become an anti-sexual?
From my understanding, it was through his own personal termination of his sexuality and in the way that he wanted to go. From my understanding, what I said previously is that he talked to women and he had talked to men, and he decided that he preferred men over women. And that was something that he decided on. Even when we talked about it and I encouraged him to try to be with women, he was just like, that's not what I want. This is what I prefer. So it was something that he determined on his own through trial and error, in a sense. But let's say through experimentation. I think everybody at a young age, well, not only say everybody, but at some point we all experiment with, you know, let's say if we dating women, we, you know, try different women. And for me, light skin, dark skin, which one, full figure women, skinny women. And I think everybody try. And on the side, the lifestyle, you have a lot of men who deal with family members, they may not accept them. So they try to date women. But they know they don't like it. But they do it for a long period of time, and they're living a false lifestyle. So instead of living a false lifestyle, he realized that it was not something that he wanted. And that's what he decided to do. And even though I may not agree with it, I support him 100%.
Excuse me, sorry about that. How old was your son when you first noticed his feminine behavior?
I'd probably say around about 12.
Okay. Does your son enjoy being an antisexual?
Yes.
What do you think about your son being an antisexual?
I would prefer for him to be with women, but I also prefer for him to be happy. So to me, if he's happy, then I'm happy. And we talk about in D.C., you know, in D.C. now, same gender loving people are allowed to get married. And I asked him, you know, do you want to get married? And we talk about that as well. And he said he's not ready for that. But, you know, if the time comes and he want to get married, I'll support it.
Do you know how your son admitted to being antisexual for the first time?
Yes, he called me over the phone. When he called me over the phone, I was like, you gay or something? And he was like, yeah. And I was just like, I already know. It's no big deal. You know, I think a lot of times as a parent, and the one that I think I wanted to say is that a lot of times people, as parents, we know certain things about our kids, whether or not they're really bad or they're really smart or they set fire. Most times we know. We just act like we don't know. Oh, I don't want to believe this because we're taught to, you know, you need to act a certain way. You need to be like this and you need to be like that. So if our kids are not act a certain way, we kind of put our blinders on. But I don't put any blinders on. I accept him for what he is. If that's what he is, that's what he is.
Excuse me. Thank you very much. And, yeah,
no
thank
problem.
You. Dusty, go ahead.
I will hit the phone line because I want to give people a chance to ask questions that are relevant to what we were talking about as opposed to trying to go back and get stuff that we talked about an hour ago. Person that called in from California, did you have a question for Joe from D.C., person in California?
Yeah, greetings to the guest and to Gus and to Justice. I'm pretty good. I'm actually in New York, but my phone is California. Excuse me, one second. Dre. Yeah, I'm actually out in Brooklyn, just FYI. But, I just wanted to comment, like, getting back to the context of the conversation. It was interesting. I was listening to the broadcast from yesterday when Love, Truth, Liberation came in and was kind of pushing back on the whole kind of like, you know, super macho. Like, I was kind of like, she was saying that we kind of get off on this super macho rant, I mean, just super macho kind of stance, talking about, feminization on the Rudy tip, like, the feminization, homosexualization of black males being this huge problem and everything. And I got to kind of agree, like, that that's not the problem, although it can be a component of the dynamic that feeds into the problem. So I guess the question I had was, do you think that, do you think that both, bitter, like, argumentation, you know, about people being gay and support also for actually being gay or homosexual, antisexual. Like, do you think that they're both kind of feeding into the problem? Possibly?
I would say from the intro is that as a black man, yes, you're brought up to be strong. You shouldn't cry. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that. And I think that, yes, we are not taught to necessarily be in touch with our emotional side. So a lot of times we try to act harder than what we really have to be. And not until you get older or you experience certain things in life, or you go into the sense of soul searching when you actually make a determination that I'm going to be this kind of person. So unless you have either supportive parents at home or you have friends that support you in ways that help to enlighten you, you know, a lot of times you're lost when you're going through life. So, yes, a lot of times the whole macho thing, we got to be macho, we got to be this. And in reality, you don't have to be anything but yourself. And, you know, for the most part, we should just accept you how you are and not make a big deal out of it.
And the support on the other side, I was saying, what I'm thinking about it is, like, homosexuality could, so-called homosexuality, antisexuality, I like the codified term, I see it, maybe it's similar to being like an allergy, like, you know, some biological component that plays out, you know, in the human realm where you're certain things just naturally, so to speak, attract you, and certain things, so to speak, naturally repulse you. So, but I mean, should that really be nurtured in and of itself? Like, I can interact with gay people fine, but as soon as like sex comes up, I'm out. You know, I don't really want to talk. You know, I don't really. You know what I'm saying? It's like a Judith Reisman. I don't know if you've been listening to Cows a lot, but Judith Reisman talks about neurotoxins that images inflict us with, like pornography and stuff like that. And I don't think it's really beneficial for us to have this all be in our faces. So I'm neutral on the you know, like live and let live type stuff, but I don't really want it to be confronted with these images, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I feel like the support and the neglect or acrimony or bitter, you know, like meanness towards, you know, violence, I think that they're both kind of, you know, something that we need to let go of. That's what I was asking.
I agree with you 100%, but, you know, something that I learned after living in Europe, I was stationed in Italy for 5 years, and I got to travel all over Europe. And the one thing that I noticed is that sex is not like sex here, meaning that a lot of the hang-ups we have here, we have because of white people. And if you ever take the time, Gus, I think you can tell them the name of the author, The History of White People.
Dr. Nell Irvin. Painter.
Yes, you'll learn that a lot of the stuff, a lot of the hang-ups we have is because of white people. But see, one thing that African-Americans don't understand is that, oh, some do and some don't, is that after Reconstruction, guess who helped educate us? The Puritans. So they helped build Howard University, Fisk, and a couple of other universities. So the Puritans, these so-called our slave masters, our new slave masters, coming in the form of religion, they taught us all this, this was bad, this was bad, Jesus don't want you to do this, Jesus don't want you to do, and guess what? Jesus never said anything about people being gay. He never said any of this crazy stuff. So what happens a lot of times is you don't realize, like, when you start understanding racism, is that a lot of hang-ups you have because somebody put them in your head, because at the end of the day, most of the stuff doesn't matter. That's a really bad thing.
But, I mean, what about the, I mean, you're speaking on the, thank you for your response. I just wanted you to comment on just directly, like, you know, because you talked about the lack of support, but what about the support? I mean, if neutrality is live and let live, and that's really, you know, where we need to get to, but so I just would like you to comment on the support, if you want to. But thanks for your response.
You mean the support of gay? You mean the support of things?
Yes. Promo, as Dr. Brewery called it, promosexuality. But I don't see straight people getting healthy support, so I don't see how you could support sexuality. You just kind of like it expressed itself, but so I'd like you to speak on like how support could be how could support be destructive?
support is destructive words that you try to make an individual be something that they do not want to be. Meaning that if you want to be a musician, but somebody want to, your parents want to force you to be a doctor and force you to go to school, then they stand a chance of you going to school and wasting their money. Because at the end of the day, all you can do is support a person mentally, physically, and spiritually. That is it. Anything outside of that, you're trying to force your beliefs on someone else. Again, if you remember when I started with the motto, education plus life experience equals wisdom, which leads to spiritual growth. So within that education and that life experience, you're sharing that with another person. So you have to make sure when you're supporting a person, you're giving them food for thought, but you're not pushing your so-called beliefs on them. So, yes, support can be detrimental when you're trying to start forcing people to be a certain way, to act a certain way, to think a certain way. Because at the end of the day, when you look at the program, this program, the program gives you knowledge. What you do with the knowledge is up to you. Just like I think that Gus was saying, that thou try to talk to 1,000 people. All we can do is introduce 1,000 people to knowledge. If we start prophesizing to them, then we're no better than the religious people. So that's what you don't. You don't want to become a religious hat, because that's not how you share knowledge. Knowledge is free. Those who seek knowledge will get knowledge. They will get the support that they need. But if you try to force yourself on people, it doesn't work. And that's bad help. And that's the kind of help that chase people away. I hope that answered your question.
Caller in, not in California, in BK. Hang tight 1 second. I want to make sure we nab some of our other callers. 909, I believe. 909, your line should be open. If you have a call, question, your line should be open, sir.
Can I be heard?
Sir.
Great program. Excellent program. Fascinating and interesting. It's just, wow. Joe, yeah, that earlier question about support, I think it was very interesting, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I had a different question, but just kind of following the thread, I guess, I was just thinking that, you know, if somebody wants to be, you know, a drug addict or something like that, and you know, you care for them, or, you know, and then drive them to the drug spot, that I think that, like, would be support, you know, saying, okay, we're gonna go to the drug spot, or let me hear you pontificate on the, you know, the high you get from doing heroin, and you know, I've talked to people where they can go in on, you know, the feeling of being high, and it's kind of, you know, it's a bit, once I heard that type of dialogue, I thought that this might be, you know, non-constructive, because they tend to talk about the positives more than the negatives, and they'll say, oh, it feels so good, and if you don't really have a clear understanding of exactly what it is that is making them feel good or making them want to do those types of drugs, you know, it can kind of be unconstructive, because you don't realize why people do drugs. I mean, there is a reason. It's a biological reason why people do, you know, drugs. They get the feeling that that dopamine and so, you know, it goes on. I mean, there's a lot of studies and a lot of, you know, knowledge on why people do drugs. And when they do it for the first time, they get this feeling that they never felt before. And a lot of times it's a lack of love and, you know, upbringing and the, you know, the types of things that you need as humans to you know, to develop properly, you know what I mean? And if you don't understand that, it's the conversation can be, you know, unconstructive. So I was just thinking that if you want to address that would be cool.
I agree with you to an extent as far as supporting a person on drugs. I think if you go back And if you look at why, again, the key to life is the decisions that you make. Each individual make a decision in their life based off of certain criteria, which is things that they've had in their life through education and things they've had through their life experience. So once you understand that, each individual makes a decision to choose what they're going to do in their life. So at the end of the day, you can't control every decision that someone makes. All you can do is provide that person with informative information, not what you think all the time or what you believe, but provide them with positive information and positive feedback, and then you would say you hope that that person will make an informed decision. Because even if you, just because you disagree with a decision that a person makes, doesn't necessarily make you right. Because you have a choice to use drugs. You have a choice, you know, you have a choice to be gay. You have a choice to practice a lifestyle that's different from other people. Because just because we say that what we're doing is right. I personally don't get into the it's a biology thing or this or this thing. Like I said, all I do is raise my son to be a strong black man. That's all I can do. That's all that I can control. Anything else outside of that, it's his decision. And I can't stop that. So why waste time trying to control something that I have no control over? All it does is push him away from me, and then we don't have that bond. Because right now, brother, we need a bond in the family, because most of my family I don't deal with. Most of my family are drug addicted, like you talked about, and they're selling drugs or they're in jail. So I don't deal with a lot of my family members.
When I hear the term bond, so, you know, I think of – oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, when I hear the term bond, I think of like marriage, or I think of something like a bonding process where, like in metallurgy, where you know you might bond two types of materials and they become one. So, you know, bonding. When I think of bonding, I think of becoming one, two things becoming one. So, are you saying that you have become? Do you believe in the concept of right and wrong?
For me, I believe in a concept of trying to make informed decisions. And that's one of the things that I talk about. I said, again, when I study. So am I studying from different cultures?
Can I stop you?
I believe in making.
Excuse me.
Because a
Joe,
lot of times.
Joe.
Ahead. Yes.
Yes. My question is, if you could answer yes or no, or the concept of right and wrong, do you believe in that?
I don't think it's just an easy yes or no answer. By laws, we have laws in place that state that things are right and wrong. Yes, we do have that. And in your perception, can you view something as being right or wrong? Yes, but in my perception, I may not view it that way. So you want me to answer something that I see on a whole different level. So for me, I look at it from a perspective of making informed decisions.
Okay, that's interesting. Last question, I guess. Do you, we say that anything that happens inside of the context of racism, white supremacy, is a result of racism, white supremacy. Things that we see, the Black Panthers, the Moors, Nation of Islam, everything that we see, the hunger for money and everything that we see right now, we say that it's in the context of racism, white supremacy. You agreed with the definition that we do live in a system of racism, white supremacy. So things that happen between you and your the female that had your child and now your child being so-called gay, do you blame the system of racism, white supremacy for that result?
I blame me for my situation, as far as my son's situation. As far as having a child before I was ready, let me ask you a question.
I mean, do you blame the system, yes or no?
Okay, let me answer your question, honestly. My situation with my son's situation, I blame on myself. Like Gus said, I took the responsibility to have sex, not use protection and stuff. Yes, that time, yes. Now, when we get to the, I want to take him to court even though he's doing good and dealing with the white man, at that point, yes. I can look at it from that perspective. But initially, I, as an individual, have to take responsibility for A, not using protection, and B, not dealing with the situation the way I should have dealt with it and just waited till I was old enough to be able to deal with the situation. I think a lot of times, yes. Is it racism? Can we blame a lot of stuff on racism? Yes. But a lot of times we have to also look at the decisions that we make. So I don't always want to say it's the white man did this. Yeah, white man did a lot of stuff. But within the system, like you said, using drugs, yes, white people bring all the drugs to the country. They control everything. But at the end of the day, black people don't have to sell drugs to each other. That's not something we have to do. That's something we make a conscious decision to do.
I just would like to just incorporate the term or phrase, confusion is lethal. And if you don't understand racism, white supremacy, everything that you think you know only confuse you. Informed decisions when you decided to not use protection and things like that, it just sounds like an uninformed decision. And what were you uninformed about was the system of racism, white supremacy, and so I mean, you have a percentage of the blame, but the majority of the blame is on the system of racism, white supremacy. I would think so. If you agree that we live in a system of racism, white supremacy, then, you know, just thank you so much for coming on this program, and it's already excellent program. It just seems I could say more, but I'll stop there.
Context of white supremacy. Good to hear from you, 909, and our caller in Brooklyn. I'm so uncouth. I don't even have names for people. Like, you'll just be your phone number, and that's how we roll out here. I will wave Hakima, investor, long time. But Cornbread is not even Hakima. Cornbread and Dr. Trav, good to see you all listening in. Dr. Trav Lyrics, 41510.com. You can check out the website. He put the t-shirts together, 41510.com. Good to see you, Dr. Trav. And just a minor correction, the caller in Brooklyn, erotoxins. That was the term Dr. Judith Reisman. She was on the program in September of 2010, erotoxins. And she talked about, she is a suspected racist. She didn't say racist, but that would obviously be who would be to blame. Racists will put a lot of sexual images and sexual concepts that are toxic in the environment and has a huge detrimental impact on your thinking and behavior. Erototoxins, that's her term. I will double check to see, the person who called in, Laura Tan. So people aren't waiting. It really, I really don't like when people wait till last minute if you have questions, so get your hand up. Laura, that's our buddy. She called in this weekend. I will get her hand. Before I get her hand, the number again is 760-569-7676. And the code is 564-943-pound. our buddy who called in this weekend. I don't want to say the name. Laura Tan, your line should be open. Did you have questions? On the talk show line, did you have a question?
Hello?
I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
No, actually, this is not Laura.
Okay. How do you want to be referenced?
Brittany.
Brittany, right on, Brittany. Good to hear from you.
Nice to hear you, though. I was just wondering for the guests, I wanted to know, is your son a top or bottom?
He started out as a bottom. And then we talked about, we started having conversations in particular in the lifestyle as well as that, you know, as far as male and female relationship, dominant versus a passive individual. And he's become more of both. But he started out a bottom. But now through a lot of the conversation we've had, we talked about being both. And one of the things that, for me, man, this is one of those man-driven kind of, you know, if I would have had a son who was straight, to me, I look at it as a top as being someone that's putting it down, giving it, compared to the female being submissive. So it's hard for me to look at my son in the face and say, yeah, go ahead. I'm okay with you being submissive and bending over. So it's still consciously with me trying to wrap my head around it. So I'm not saying that I'm 100% okay with it. I'm just trying to support my son the best way I can. So the best way I could was like, look, dude, you need to be giving it too. You can't just be taking it. That ain't working for me. So that was the man in me trying to wrap my head around it as we talked about it. So, yes, he started out a bottom. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he started out a bottom. But over the last year or so, he's becoming both.
Okay.
And it was because of me talking to him about that.
All right. Okay. Now, does he actually, is it more him being gay, making a decision to be gay, or however he feels about it, being born gay, does he enjoy the sexual activity, or does he more like the relationship of being with a man, or is it more he likes the sex? Do you know that?
Yes, I can answer your question. From my understanding, he enjoys the sex. And and he enjoys being in a relationship. He prefers to be in a relationship than being out here with a whole bunch of dudes. So, like I said, again, my son kind of real laid back and quiet. He's not running the streets. Not saying that he's not out there doing his thing, but he's kind of a laid back, kind of a house kind of a person. It's kind of his personality.
And when he has a sexual encounter, does he discuss that with you, like after the person, or?
If I ask him, he'll tell me about it. Yes, we talk about it.
Okay. All right. That's all.
I ask everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like I was saying, there's nothing that I don't ask. You know, and I look at it from the standpoint, if I had a daughter or a son, I would ask the same question. So I ask everything.
Right. Yeah.
I want to know.
Okay. All right. Thank you for answering my questions.
No problem.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good to hear from you, Brittany. The person who called in, oh, this is Non Mighty Wick. Before I get Non Mighty Wick's hand, one other question. Appreciate the honesty. Have you, Joe from D.C., have you ever had any sort of sexual play, sexual contact with another male?
No.
Okay. Non-Mighty... right on. Non-Mighty Wick, your line should be open. Non-Mighty Wick, if you had questions, your line should be open.
Good evening, everyone. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Before you ask your question, I wanted to put something out there. Gus, when I was talking to one of my friends, I literally ask, what is it you like in the anus that's better than the vagina? I said, dude, there is no feeling ever in the world that's better than the vagina, so I don't understand what you like about that. And they sat and explained it to me, and I still don't get it. But I asked. so it helps me understand what my son likes, but I still don't get it. I don't get it, but that's what they like. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I had to get that out.
No problem. No problem. I just I had a couple questions just to be sure that I heard you correctly when you were speaking earlier. Did I hear you say that you are attempting to, or that you raise your son, or that you're raising him to be a strong black man? Did I hear you say that?
Yes.
Okay. Did I also hear you, another one? I think I heard you say. Did you say that you were that you have to talk to your son like he's a girl sometimes?
Well, when it comes to the sexual part, you know, because when you're dealing with someone, like when a young lady asked me if you're a bottom, if you understand the concept of that lifestyle, a bottom is someone that's submissive, which would be considered the female role. And a person on top would be considered a male role. So that's what I mean from that perspective. Not so much that I'm treating him like a woman or anything, but when you're talking about it from the standpoint of sexual intercourse, that's how, to me, I've had to approach it.
Okay, my final question is just, I guess if you were to rate yourself maybe on, I don't know, scale 1 to 10, or just on how successful or how constructive you feel your attempt at, you know, raising him to be a strong black man, you know, how would you rate yourself, how would you rate your job so far?
I think I would probably say 7, because I think he's only 19, so it remains to be seen how he's going to turn out later in life. I mean, I can say this. In order for him to live with me, he had to go to school full-time, and he had to have a full-time job. He had to follow the rules that set for the house. If he don't follow the rules, he got to go. And if at any time my son do not like the rules that I have, he can leave. This is a dictatorship. It's not a democracy. So he has a 3.7 GPA, and he worked almost full-time. So that's what I instill in him. It's no free ride. He saves his money, he invests, and he pay bills. Nothing is free here. He cook and clean. So that's what I would do if he was straight. That's what I would do if I had a female. That's how we live. It's non-negotiable here. I'm prior military, so I'm kind of a dictator.
Just a quick follow-up. If your son was not doing sexual stuff with other males, you know, whatever you do, you know what I'm saying? If he was not doing that, you know, but doing that with females, you know, would you still rate yourself as a 7 or higher or lower?
No, I still say a 7 because my rules will still be the same. Because at the end of the day, even though you put rules and you try to give them guidance, they still do what they want to do. Kids still do what they want to do at the end of the day. And you have no control. Again, like I said, all I can do is put out the experience, the education, and the life experience. That's all I can give him. It's still up to him to make informed decisions about his life and how he want to go. But he know living with me, this is how he has to live. So I'll give you an example. I can't control what he do when I'm not here. But when I'm home, it's no dudes in my house. I don't play like that. Whatever you do, I'm sorry, you have to do it outside. It's only so far I can go. In order for a dude to be in my house, I have to meet them first. I have to see what kind of people you're dealing with. So that's standard, whether he was straight or if I had a daughter. Those rules do not change. So it's no laying around here having some dude in my house. There's no trying to have sex in the basement or your room while I'm upstairs. No, I don't play like that. I come from an old school mother that, you know, believed in child abuse. So, yeah, I'm real strict.
Thank you. I'll let some other folks get some questions in.
The person that dialed in from New York, caller in New York, did you have a question for Joe from D.C.?
Is this me? Can I be heard?
We can hear you.
All right. I just got a question for the guest. It has to do with what 909 was talking about. You said, do you believe in right and wrong? And you said it's like a relative type of thing. Am I correct?
Yes.
All right. I was just going to say, like, right and wrong, I think is informed on what your goals are in life.
Mm-hmm.
And this program is about placing white supremacy with justice, right? So with that in mind, white people's actions towards black people, non-white people, over history has been like, could it be described as like a genocide almost, or genocidal? Is that logical?
Yes, but I view what white people do as a conscious decision of what they're doing. So for, to them, they're not wrong. So when you look at the things that they put in place to oppress us, from religion to laws to slavery, they don't view it as being wrong, and they never will view it as being wrong. As the when you can look at the President Obama, they don't want him apologizing for nothing that they did because they don't view it as being wrong.
Right, right. But as victims,
so
right,
we get caught up in right and wrong. Say that again.
But as victims of white supremacy, China, replace that system, right? We have to adopt certain actions, you know, to replace the system, right?
Yes.
So in that context, we can say, we can, like, have a value on what's right and wrong. And if you could describe the actions of white people to black people as genocidal, then wouldn't, like, homosexuality be assisting them?
I wouldn't consider myself an expert on homosexuality. You know what I'm saying? This is my perspective from dealing with my son and my life experience. So, you know, I don't want to put myself in a box and say yes, but I don't have anything.
Right, I understand. I don't have anything.
But, yes, I can't answer that 100%.
Hello?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Well, I was going to say, all right, I'm not trying to judge anyone because you can do constructive things, you know, no matter what your orientation is. But I don't know if anybody's heard about what Nigeria recently did in regards to homosexuality. Like, America had told them they had to, like, have less strict laws against it. Did anybody hear about that?
Yes.
So I kind of see like a concerted effort to try to push homosexuality to different peoples around the world. And that's all I have to say, really.
And I understand where you're coming from, but as a person who's traveled around the world, there's a lot of people in and out of the military. Trust me, just because you don't see it or they don't talk about it doesn't mean it's not there. I've met a lot of people in certain lifestyles by traveling around the world when I was in the military. Trust me, it's a whole different environment when you leave the country.
All right, copy that. Thank you for answering my question.
Right on. I will give out the number again in case folks, they have questions or comments. The number to dial is 760-569-7676. And the code is 564-943-POUND. If you have a question and you're on that line, press *6. If you are on the TalkShoe line, it's *8 if you have a question. Make sure you get your hands up. Don't want folks waiting until the last minute. I'll get the caller in BK. I'll get you next. I wanted to double check to see if Justice had any other questions. I'll get the person in Ohio as well. Justice, if you have any other questions, feel free. Justice, are you still with us? Oh, okay. Right on. We will hear from Justice later on. I will get the other folks that dialed in. I'll start, since the caller in Ohio hasn't spoken yet, I'll get the caller in Ohio first, and then I will get the caller in Brooklyn. I'll get your other questions as well. Person who called in from Ohio, your line should be open. Did you have questions?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Joe. The question is, you said that you ranked your parenting around a 7, and you said it would be the same if you said it would be the same if your son was had a girlfriend instead of a boyfriend.
Yes.
But does it, just from a father perspective of grandchildren, would that make you feel any different?
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
To answer your question, am I hurt that I won't have any grandkids? Yes, I am. Is it something that I have to stop every day? I don't, because even if my son was straight, I could stand a chance of him not giving me grandkids. You know, he could go out and do something stupid, get killed at a young age. I give you an example. In Washington, D.C., currently now, the train station 2 blocks from me, when you come off the train station at night, young guys are out there robbing people. And my son almost got robbed twice. That has nothing to do with his gender. So when I look at it from that perspective, anything can happen. Living in D.C., it's starting to get crazy now. People don't have jobs. People need to eat. The young kids, they arrested some kids, 14 today, that's out there robbing people in broad daylight. They're not even waiting till night no more. They're catching you in broad daylight. So that changes my perspective.
Okay. That's it. All right, Gus.
Right on. Good to hear from you, sir. Caller in Brooklyn, your line should be open. I don't know if you had other questions you wanted to ask.
Yes. I just wanted to ask, I noticed a pattern of, personally, you know, like just a pattern of enabling, you know, many black people, like towards like so-called mixed race and also so-called homosexual people, like they're pretty much favored in the context of white supremacy. So just wanted to know or hear, I don't know, like what do you think about that? Have you noticed that? They prefer that?
If I understood your question right, you mean as African American, you mean people, we're enabling people or encouraging people to do certain things? Is that what I understand, or can you repeat your question, please?
Enabling, yeah, like just kind of, I don't know, puffing them up?
Or pumping them up to be a certain way?
Just a period. Just puffing them up.
From my perspective, no, because I don't agree with the lifestyle. My son, no, I don't agree with the lifestyle. But if that's the decision that he wants to make for himself, then I support my son into trying to make a better life for him. Told you, like previous in the conversation, I wanted him to be with a woman. I'm heartbroken that I won't have grandkids or anything. But if that's the decision he wants to make, I have to support my son the best way I can. So I try not to, I don't enable the lifestyle again. He's not allowed to do that funny stuff when I'm home. You know, what he do when I'm not here, I have no control of that. He can't bring dudes in the house, ain't no sexing in my house or none of that. So I'm not enabling anything. So I think from the perspective of me and my son having honest, and what I'm trying to show is that me and my son have an honest conversation about his lifestyle. I don't agree with it, but I support him. And go ahead.
How do you? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Ask your question.
Well, how do you feel about the fact that the system prefers gay people, so-called
I'm gay, so-called, you know, how do you feel about the system of white supremacy prefers their black men homosexual, so-called?
And you know what, and it irritates the H out of me, because every time I go to an office environment, corporate America, you are right. I see a bunch of women, and I see some gay black guy there. You are correct. Me and Gus actually had a conversation today, and I was telling Gus how I had a job interview today. And what's funny is that, and this is something from Ms. Pam, too. Ms. Pam, I forgot this is another question I wanted to ask you, is that from my perspective, I stand a better chance of getting hired with not having a black woman interviewing me. I'm not saying that's for everybody, but as long as white men interview me with a white woman, I stand a greater chance of getting a job. Why that is? Racism at its best. Also, when I'm in the interview, I have to be as humble and as submissive and not as educated as possible to get the job. When I interview with African-American women, it's extremely combative. Could just be me. I don't know. But those are some of the things that I face every day. And it's one of the things, I had a job interview today. It was three white guys and a white woman on the phone. White woman didn't say nothing. It was three guys. And I stand a better chance of getting a job like that than I do having an African-American on the panel. Don't know why, but it has just been my experiences.
Well, thank you. I don't really got any more questions.
Right on. I will see if, let's see here. Not to save that for another day. Alrighty. Because if Pam is listening and she wants to respond to that, she can share. If not, we'll catch her the next time around. And I'd be, well, yeah, we listeners, if they have thoughts on that, they can share as well about the employment situation, if that's been their experience with regards to what the makeup of your panel looks like when you go for an interview, trying to get a job, when you think your chances are better with regards to what the panel looks like, males, females, black people, or excuse me, white people, non-white people on the panel trying to get a job. I also wanted to make sure we touched on, you shared about this on the program Saturday, and just so folks aren't confused, I think someone referenced Love, Truth, Liberation. She called in to offer her views on homosexual behavior. That was not on the program yesterday. That was on the program this past Saturday, the compensatory call-in program, March 3rd broadcast. But on that same program, you were talking about some of the white females, or one white female in particular, that you were in a sexual relationship with, where she has a black son, and you were saying that you found that she was more receptive to getting information about racism, white supremacy, and I think the term you used was black education, that she was more receptive to that than a lot of the black females that you have quote-unquote dated. And Pam, she shared some of her thoughts around that on the program. I just want to see, you know, why do you think that is? Why do you think that this white woman is more receptive to this sort of information, much more so than the black females that you've, quote unquote, dated?
From my understanding is the Caucasian young lady has always dated African-American men. And from my understanding, she has never dated a Caucasian man. So that could be a possibility why she's more perceptive to African-American history or knowledge or trying to see things from our perspective. But for me, dealing with her, I didn't hide that I was pro-black, that I love black people, and I'm tired of white supremacy. Whenever I see it, I point it out. She know that the job that I was at, I was fighting them tooth and nails. I went to EEO twice on them. I was cuffing people out. She knew all of this. But whenever I provided information, she was always one of the people that would read it, and we were always having intelligent conversations about it. A lot of times I would send the information to African-American women. I'd be like, hey, did you read it? They'd be like, I'm not reading that stuff. You know I don't read. You know I'm not into that stuff. And and these were highly educated women, and they didn't care for it. And the funny thing is that the Caucasian young lady is not highly educated, but she was in, she took the information, we talked about it, and you move forward from there. And she was just more receptive. Even when it came to religion, you know, she was more receptive. We talked about her family, her religious family. We talked about her some family members that are racist and everything like that. And we talked about certain things that she's had to deal with having a black son, how white people have treated her when she put her son picture up, how they act towards her. We talked about all of that. So now she's able, at first, you know, kind of since she was, I'm not going to say she was ignorant of the fact, but she didn't fully understand it. But now that I help explain it to her, she can spot it now. So when she put her pictures up and people look at her funny or talk dirty to her, she noticed it. And she can deal with it.
Why do you think specifically the black females that you've dated, why do you think they were not receptive? Do you have a theory on why it is that they didn't want to, they didn't want that sort of information?
My information, when I present my information, I guess it comes from an African liberation from theology standpoint, and because most of the African-American women I know believe in Jesus Christ, all they need is Jesus Christ, they're not receptive to any information that I provide them for the most part. I had one young lady say this to me. She said, everything that they put in a book is not necessarily true. And then I said, I agree with you, but can you apply the same concept to the Bible? And she told me no. And then I knew we couldn't have a conversation anymore because intellectually she wasn't being honest. So I find a lot of that.
This white woman, suspected racist, who has a black child, do you think it's possible that she might have been more receptive to this information because, hey, she was thinking this will help me be a better racist? Do you think that's possible?
I wouldn't say that because majority of all of her friends were African-American women, and African-American women love hanging out with her. They love being around her. So if, I don't know, even now, I actually talked to a couple, she's actually listening to the show. I phoned her about the show. She's listening to the show.
Should have her call in. Yep. Call in.
I don't know if she would call in. But like I said again, with my son, Gus, with everybody, I'm upfront and I'm honest. I try not to hide the information. Like I said, she know I'm pro-black, everything. So it's not, it was never a secret how I am and how, you know, I feel about certain things. But she was always receptive to the information. I'm not saying that she agreed with me on everything. But at least she read the information, and we had intelligent conversations about it. But, again, when I met her, she had more black female friends than I did.
Do you think it's possible for a white woman to have a lot of black friends and to be receptive to the sort of information that she was sharing with her and to even have a black child and to still be a practicing racist white supremacist?
Is it possible? Yes. Well, this particular person, I would say from my perspective, I doubt it, but I could be wrong, but I don't think that she's a racist. But it's possible, but I don't think so.
What has
say that anything in life is possible. You know, you can never say, oh, no, that'll never happen. But as far as I know, she's not like that.
What has she done for
and
you
actually,
to... Con-
and actually, her mother... And actually, guys, just to go to refer, her mother just married an African-American male.
Wow.
So I met her grandmother. Her family is, some of her family is open. And, you know, so from my perspective, again, we're still friends. We're not dating. We're not having sex anymore. We're still friends. And even when I sent her information about the judge, talking about President Obama and the whole dog situation, she read that. We talked about it. She was on it. So I send some things, the same information to one of my black friends. They be like, man, you know I don't read that stuff. I'm not into that stuff. And I'm not saying every single African-American woman is like that. I'm saying some of the ones that I know.
What has this white woman done to convince you that she is not a racist?
When I left my job and I left my job for, okay, I'll give you an example. When I was fighting my company, white folks gave me letters of recommendation to support me. The black people didn't. So while I agree that a lot of white folks are racist, it's hard for me to say that all white people are racist. Well, I mean, so that's one of the perspectives, Gus, that I always say that from my perspective, I've had just as many bad white people as just as many good white people. So I don't say that all white people are good. I don't say that all white people are bad. Do I think they benefit from the system of racism set up? Yes, I do. Do I think my friends benefit from racism? I do.
Hang on one second. I don't want to get too far afield because we kind of strayed from the question. I just want to see if we can get a clear answer. With this white woman specifically, if we are in a system of white supremacy, which you and I both agree that we are, if that's true, mm-hmm. what specifically has this white woman done to convince you that she is not a racist?
When I was fighting white people, she supported me by providing me information, and when I needed help, she supported me. Any other black person I asked to support me.
What sort of information did she provide you when you were dealing with the white people on your job?
It was a court particular situation, so I can't necessarily get involved. I mean, it was dealing with the job, so I can't necessarily get details about it, but she supported me.
Okay. I would make sure I share this. This is really more for the listeners. If someone were to ask Gus, do you think it's possible for a white person to do the things that... Gus, do you think it's possible for a white person to do those things and still be a practitioner of white supremacy racism? Absolutely. And as I've said consistently on the program, white people are in the best position to provide resources, be it information, be it financial support, whatever, a job, a letter of recommendation. Because of white terrorism, they are the ones who are in the best position to give out that sort of assistance. So, yes, and I would tell any listener out there, just because a white person got me my cell phone that I'm on right now, 2-year contract, and this white person is an admitted racist. So just for the listeners, I would say do not be fooled just because a white person is, quote unquote, helpful from time to time. Just for the listeners. Let's see. You said, and this was on the Saturday program. I guess you all can go back and listen Saturday if you missed some of this information. Go back and listen to the Saturday compensatory call-in. You said that you could not agree. You've heard the programs. You've heard our stance on no sex with white people. You said that you could not agree with that stance of, you know, hey, we are in a system of white supremacy, but I would not agree that, you know, we should discontinue sexual intercourse between white people, non-white people. Why would you take that view?
And that is a situation that I am dealing with every day. So while, yes, I agree with you 100%, it's just something that I deal with internally every day. So I really don't have a clear answer. Like I said, the more I understand the system of racism, the more I study. I agree with you, Gus, 100%. But on the other side, like I said, I've seen different things. So it's one of them kind of issues that the more I'm learning, the more I understand, the more I grow.
You said, I know, Pam, you all had some dialogue around this issue, and you said that when you are with a white person, a white female that you're sexually involved with, when you're with that white female and then you're out and you see a black female, that you can feel something in your stomach. Can you talk about what that feeling is and what you think is responsible for that feeling?
I would say that a lot of African-American men, what I've come to understand is that even though a lot of African-American women are friends with white women, they still don't like to see white women date black men. And because I recall that I went to go visit my white friend at work, and she's like, oh, here go my friend right here. Her friend gave me the worst dirty little gush that you could ever give somebody. She didn't even really speak to me. She looked at me up and down, gave me the dirty look, and turned around. I said, we ain't dating, we just friends. That's it. We just talk every now and then over the internet now, or, you know, may get lunch or something every now and then. That's it. We're not having sex. We're not doing anything. And I even told her, I was like, your friend gave me the dirtiest look ever. She was like, oh, but she, you know, I was like, yeah. So from what I can understand is a lot of African-American women may be friends with white women, but they still don't like to see white women date African-American men.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Wow. If folks have questions, feel free to dial in. Probably going to try not to go to the three-hour mark since we do have a program tomorrow. So if you have questions, you should get your hand up sooner than later. Don't want to wait till the last minute. The number to dial is 760-569-7676. And the code is 564-943-pound. For sure. Press star 6 if you have a question. If you're on the talk show line, it's star 8. You said that you were in the military. That was when you started having these sexual experiences with white females, and it was because you were in an environment where you didn't have access to very many black females. Is that correct?
Yes. When I was actually stationed over in Italy, I was stationed in Italy for 5 years. So when I went to Italy, the ratio for for men to women was there was approximately about 10 to 15 men to one woman. And that was just women in general. And then when you started breaking it down to just black women, then African-American women, then it got even worse than that. So it kind of left you with two options of not dating anybody or date Italian women. So that's when I first started dating Italian women, white women in Europe. So I've dated Italian women, German women, I've had a Spanish and a Spanish girlfriend. But I've dated an Asian woman, but she was black, half African American, half Asian. So that may not count.
Knowing
I've
what you
dated white women as well. But all this was before I was conscious of a lot of stuff.
Knowing what you know now. Number one, red tails that popped into my mind. And two, knowing.
And you know, when I saw the movie, I was thinking the same thing. And actually, I went to the movies with an African American woman, and she said the same thing. One of the things that I did want to say, Gus, when I came, so when I was in the military, I had stopped dating African American women because of the ratio. So I would say for like the last 3 years, I had dated white women. So when I came back to the United States, I actually was in a culture shock dating black women again. I actually had to learn how to date African-American women all over again because it was just different. The attitude was different. The mannerism was different. It was different. I can give you one example. Like, you know, as a lot of men, we may complain about a lot of African-American women, they real mouthy or argumentative. I didn't have that. Gus, if I came in the house at 3 o'clock in the morning and I wanted a hot meal, she cooked it. No problem. Hands down. When I met her family, there was no problem. Her mother accepted me. Everybody else accepted me. Her mother would cook, hands down. Her father would give me wine, give me drunk. Her family loved me. So when I started dating African American women again, and I'm not saying that she is better. So I want to preface this by saying I don't think anybody is better than African American women. Or you understand what I'm saying? I'm not giving an example to say that I'm putting sisters down. By no means will I ever put a sister down to justify dating a non African American woman. I would never do that, and I'm not saying that. It just there's little things that I noticed that guys talk about. So in the military, a lot of black guys, when they went to Italy, they never, ever dated black women again, ever. Even when they come back to the States, they don't date African-American women anymore.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Men from, you know, wherever, Germany, Italy, you know, here. Do you, looking back, reflecting on those experiences, do you think that at any time any of those white women or their family members or whomever, do you think any of them were practicing racism, like looking back and being more informed?
My friend's family, I wouldn't say so, but her friends, yes. Her friends would do stuff, and I would tell her that, look, they doing this. And she was like, oh, I never noticed that. So
what were they
I
doing?
A lot of things to her. It was always subtle things, like they wouldn't say anything. They would be disrespectful to her. But it's certain things that, like, people do. Like you know how, like, we meet you friends, and I may do something that may be disrespectful that only maybe a guy would notice, that a woman may not notice? They would do stuff like that, but it would be real disrespectful. So with me being around, we actually had to stop being friends with a lot of her friends. Then when we went out to restaurants, the Italians' perspective up north, where I was in Vicenza, which is about 30 minutes from Venezia. Wherever, you know, everybody that don't know where they do all the gondolas, the boat rides and everything like that. And a lot of the people up north felt as though the Africans were all part of the prostitution and they bought all the drugs in the country. So if they felt as though you were African, they really gave you a derogatory look. But if you was dark, but you was of Latin descent, like Dominican Republic or Puerto Rican, or, you know, from Spain or something like that, they actually treated you like family. But if you was African, oh, no, they didn't want nothing to do with you.
Hmm.
So that's something that she didn't notice, that once we started dating, because when we started dating, I had a Puerto Rican friend. So I learned how to dance salsa, merengue, and bachata. So the Spanish clubs were mixed, were half Spanish and half white, even techno or country. And so that's when I would see a lot of people treating us different. And she and I had to teach her, like, dude, this is not right what they're doing. They're not serving us because they're being racist. We're waiting a long time because of this. So, yes, in Italy, it was a lot of racism.
I'm remembering Abiola Wabara. She was on the program this past summer, 2011. A professional basketball player in the area of the world known as Italy, and she had quite a few comments about just blatant white supremacy that she experienced, them throwing bananas on the court when she was playing. And she said the same thing about the prostitution, how she had racist men stopping her in the street as though she was a prostitute and trying to proposition her. Just, you know, same old disgusting story. One of our listeners, she wrote in, a listener in Japan, she wrote in, she said that she wasn't sure that you answered the question around that feeling in your stomach when you're with a white woman sexually, and then you come in contact with a black female, you get that feeling in your stomach. She said she wasn't sure that you answered the question. So do you have an idea with regards to what's causing that feeling? What's going on when you get that feeling when you are around black female, when you're sexually involved with a white female?
Yes. Initially, when I first started dating white women, did I get that sickening feeling in my stomach? Yes, I did. Even now, do I still get the sickening feeling in my stomach? Yes, I do. So that's why I said I agree with you, Gus. So in order for me, honestly, to continue dating white women, if I was to go back and start dating white women again, I would actually have to deny that feeling. But yes, I get the sickening feeling in my stomach. But you have to deny it. If you are conscious or enlightened about the situation that's going on, then yes, you get that sickening feeling. And even when I wasn't conscious, I got the sickening feeling. I just didn't really understand why. But now I understand why I have it. So if I was to ever date a Caucasian woman again, then I would actually literally have to learn how to turn it off. So what happens is thus, most African-American men that I notice that date white women, they don't always come to black establishments. They normally stay on the white side of town. That helps you to deal with the situation. And most people don't. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, why does God never come around? Well, in order to not have that sickening feeling, or until you're comfortable within your skin of dating white women, you stay on the white side of town.
Hmm. Very interesting. I'm going to check the phone lines, but I'm taking two different pieces of conversations and putting them together to see if this makes sense. When we spoke earlier before the program about that voice in your head that lets you know when you're doing something incorrect, when you're on the right path, you kind of get a signal from the creator, from the spirit world, perhaps, or whatever you want to label it, about what you're doing, if it's right or wrong, and kind of you know when you're doing something wrong. And then when 909, when he questioned about right and wrong, and I'm just putting those together, maybe that feeling that you get in your stomach is the creator, or however you want to phrase it, some higher power, letting you know that that behavior, being sexually involved with a white person under white supremacy racism, is incorrect, wrong. And that signal is coming to you, and that feeling that you get in your stomach when you're around black females. Does that make sense? Do you think that's what it could be?
When you, like I said, when you're not enlightened, you don't necessarily view her from that necessary perspective. But now that you're enlightened, and you're informed about what's going on, then yes, you can look at it from that perspective.
Hmm. You think that's what could be happening?
There's a difference when you're ignorant, because I think there's a difference when, you know, you may support black people, but when you're ignorant of the fact of racism and everything like that, you can have a lot of things going on in your head, but you don't really pay attention to them. But now that you're conscious of certain things, and you get that feeling in your stomach or something in your head telling you, dude, I don't know about this. You may actually pay it some mind and try to understand what's going on.
Context of white supremacy. The folks that are online, I'm just double checking to make sure we got all the questions. Non Mighty Wick, 909, person in Ohio, and caller in Brooklyn. Did y'all have any questions, or are you all good? Or if anybody else, if you have questions, you should get your hand up now. It's *8 if you're on the TalkShoe line, and *6 if you're on the Free HD line. Did any of you all have any questions?
Yeah. I wanted to ask if you've seen a couple of this one, Secrets in Plain Sight. Have you ever seen this documentary?
No, I haven't. Can you repeat the question one more time, please?
All right. I was asking if you've seen.
I heard you correctly. I want to make sure.
Have you seen this documentary, Secrets in Plain Sight?
No, I haven't.
Well, you said you were Mason and stuff like that, and I mean, just anybody. It's incredible, incredible. Just as far, if you know about the system, if you're somewhat conscious of the system of white supremacy and everything, like it'll blow your mind just with how they've kind of laid out all these their plans are laid out in the formation of the cities and stuff like that. It's crazy. But and the other thing, the movie, probably seen the movie A Beautiful Mind. But there was the scene with the blonde, where he's talking about how the theory of group dynamics, to where if the person does what's best for themselves, then everyone fails, because only one person can get the goose, can get the golden egg. But if everyone does what's best for the group in general, then everybody wins, because that's the only way that everybody can win. The analogy he used was like if a bunch of guys go in the bar and they're trying to hit on the one, beautiful female that they all want to get with, and then only one guy gets with her, and then the rest of the guys go and hit on the second stringers, and then they get offended because, they weren't the first pick, and then, most people go home unhappy. But, like, if they all just kind of, like, just present themselves as people and don't, you all go after one person, they all just kind of relate with each other, then everybody wins. So it's just, I was just thinking about group dynamics as far as our situation in the system of white supremacy, that if we do what's best for the group, then our minds will emerge to actually, out of the garbage that we're stuck in right now with preferring white people because they have these false advantages which they've given themselves, you know. But we're never going to emerge from that as long as we just feed into it. So I guess it was just a comment.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Are we good?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Can I be heard? Yes, I heard. Is that you now, Mighty Wick?
No, I did hear somebody else.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Oh, that's not Mighty Wick.
I don't know who it was. I did hear somebody else, though. Their line is open, too. Whoever said that, your line is open, too.
Okay. Basically, I just wanted to know from Joe, when he said he was an atheist, is exactly his perspective as an atheist.
Say that again. Can you? I didn't fully understand your question. Can you repeat it one more time, please?
What when you say you're an atheist, what is your definition of an atheist?
My definition of an atheist is more or less the same definition of not believing in a God, whether you want to be called Jesus, Krishna, Buddha, anyone.
Okay. So when you got that feeling in your gut, what was that? That just the energy? Or just something, I'm kind of getting confused on not believing in anything, but you know, mm-hmm. when you believe something, you don't know nothing. So you knew there was something going on with your stomach when you was in prison.
So from the perspective of answering your question of me studying religion, I looked at more...
I'm not talking about religion.
Let me answer your question, though. I'm going to answer your question. It's not necessarily about religion, but when you ask me what do I feel like an atheist and the feeling that I get in my stomach, I don't necessarily think of it as a God.
What is it?
It's just you. The God you're looking for is you. So when I was trying to tell you from looking at it from studying various cultures, you learn that the God you seek is in you. You are that God you're looking for. You are that person that you need to set yourself free. So you're saying,
I'm trying to get clarification, that's all. I'm not
trying to go
in any direction. You're saying that you're an atheist, so you don't believe in God, but you are God. So you believe in yourself. That's the God you're gonna follow, right?
Yes, you believe in yourself.
Okay, so that's why I was saying when you got that feeling in your gut, the God in yourself is telling you what you're doing is, I don't know to say right or wrong, but I don't know what you want to label that as. What would you label that as?
I think you can label it. I mean, for me, it's a decision that you make, whether or not you want to do it. So if it makes you feel good to say it's wrong, then it's wrong. But I think it's a decision that you make. It's a perspective that you have to have to determine which way you want to go with that.
Okay. All right. That's it. Thank you.
And honestly, what I'm actually explaining is remember again that I was going to be a pastor. So a lot of times when you hear me talk, yes, I talk from a theological philosophy standpoint of how I interpreted the information. So while I may not believe in God, I still think that you can learn a lot from all cultures. All great men and women have something to teach. So I studied them. But from studying, what I was talking about is the God in you, you understanding that you are that person that you need to succeed and stop waiting on someone else. And that's why I was saying when I was explaining the motto, education for life experience equals wisdom, which leads to spiritual growth. You are that person. You are that being. And whether you look at it, because most of us are into Christianity. So even Christianity teaches this. You may not learn it in church, but it's in the Bible. It's there. I can give you the scriptures that tell you that. So what I'm telling you is not something that's just made up. It's actually in the Bible. It's in the Quran. It's right there. But what people choose to teach you is up to you.
Right.
There was 909, I'm going to get you as well. There was somebody that has not asked a question that had a hand up. I want to get their question. And someone emailed a question. Email question is the mother of your child white or non-white?
African-American.
Okay. Negrito's Way, your line is open. Did you have a question for Joe from D.C.?
Good evening, Gus, and to your guest.
Shooby-doo.
I have a question for Joe. I was wondering, what are you doing currently now to get a better understanding of white supremacy, racism, white supremacy, that would convince you more about it, that won't get you confusing apart from listening to the CALS program?
I listen to Black Liberation Radio, whether it's with, I don't know if you heard of a guy out of Missouri called Dr. Ray Hagan. I listen to him. I listen to Gus. I listen to the actual gentleman that runs the station here. I've read both books from from Islam, the Nation of Islam. They had two books that they put out in reference to the Jews. I've read the history of the Jews, their standpoint. Since I'm home, I can give you the Africans who wrote the Bible to man-made gods, to American theocracy, science against religion. I mean, anything that you can think of, I have read those books. I studied just as much information on African history, African knowledge, as just as much as everybody else. And that's one of the things that me and Gus talked about, whether or not Gus, if possible, when he set up his web page, to actually have a page where that we can all share all the books and links that we've all read to help inform all of us. You know, so another good book is They Came Before Columbus, if you haven't read that one.
All right, thank you. That was it. Thank you.
Well, one of the other things that I was talking about, and I think that, like, when I was talking about Gus, is that while we are trying not to, we're trying to be as conscious, as enlightened as possible, I think what we fully have to understand is that the number one drug in the country is religion. That is the number one drug that inflicts our people. But in order to get our people off the drug, we have to fully understand the drug. So even though I'm an atheist, I still study to understand the drug. So if you understand that drug, like you understand alcohol and cocaine and marijuana, then you understand how the program works. And I think that's something that I'm really trying to get everybody to really understand, that that's the drug. That's the problem. Besides all the other problems.
Okay, I just like to understand your meaning of religion. When you say religion is the drug, what particular are you talking about when you're saying religion?
Okay, we understand that African Americans did not believe in Christianity until we were enslaved. That was something that was taught to us through our slave masters. It continued through after Reconstruction. The people who educated us in schools were Puritans. So, and then you keep going up and up, and you understand the people that taught us, the people that is the same people that enslaved us, our education process, the way we think, the way we look, but the way we act, these are the same people that taught us. And they taught us mainly from one book, which was the Bible. So once you understand how that tool is being used to control our mind, how it's hard to get people to break free of that, then you also have a better understanding from my perspective why we don't get along, why we have a hard time supporting each other. It's right there. And I think sometimes we overlook when in our enlightened process of reading everyone else, all the other African-American greats who come before us, their books, sometimes we miss this one big drug that's like the elephant in the room, that this Christian Bible is the problem. But because I'm a Mason, I see the Bible from a different perspective than you that's not into Masonry. And that's another perspective I'm trying to get you to understand. Most people don't know that D.C. is the exact design of Egypt. It's not because, it's not by accident. It's by design.
So religion then equals Christianity to you because you feel that the majority of black people here in the United States practice Christianity. Is that correct?
Well, Christianity, religion, Judaism, it's all written by the same people. If there's
what
no,
do you think?
The people are not different. It's the same people that wrote them all.
Well, what do you think about African people practicing, let's say, voodoo? Do you think that's a problem?
Voodoo, I'll give you an example of voodooism. Okay, every time you take communion in church, it's voodooism. I mean, all you have to do is, Gus, they were talking about vampire movies. This is one thing that I wanted to bring up. The show yesterday, they were talking about vampires. The guy had a question about vampires and werewolves. Remember, Gus?
Twilight, yes, sir.
Yes, Twilight. So if you think about it like this, what's the purpose of vampires drinking? When you think of vampires, they live on what? Blood. So whenever you drink the blood, you get life, you get power. Whenever you werewolves eat the flesh, whenever they eat the flesh, they get power, they get knowledge. Okay, what do Catholics do every fourth Sunday? They take communion. They are practicing a werewolf, vampire, voodoo ritual. Even though it's symbolic, they still do it. So for Africans who created spirituality to follow Christianity, it's a slap in the face to our ancestors. So when you study, you are the one that God that you seek is in you, that's true spirituality. Because even the Bible tells you there will come a time when the Father will look for people that's worshiping in his spirit. It's inside, not outside. It's not in the church. You don't need to go there. It's in you. What you need is in you. It's not outside.
So then when you're saying religion, then it's equal to Christianity. Is that correct?
Religion, Christianity, yes. It's all the same. Christianity, Islam, Judaism, any Buddhism, anyone you want to pick. As Africans, we shouldn't follow any of that stuff. Why would you go take secondhand information? It's almost like taking secondhand information. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just still want to know, what do you think about the ancient Africans that are practicing their rituals in Africa? What do you think about that?
Okay. If you study African history, you know that we created it. Civilization started in Africa, which means we created it. But it wasn't religion. Religion is something, a tool the white man created to control your mind. And it works. It's a blueprint. But you may not look at it that way, so I'm encouraging people, look at the Bible as a blueprint of how to control the mind. Everything that they have done to us is in the Bible. Everything. It's right there for you to see what they're doing. They're not hiding it. They put the plan right in your face.
Wait, that's good. Thank you.
909, did you have a question?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're pretty much over time. I'm extremely satisfied. Yeah, it's weird, but yeah.
It's just, I don't know if that's good or bad.
Oh, it's good, man. It's actually... yes, it's not. It's pretty rare for me,
you know, so I don't say that lightly. I'm extremely satisfied. So I was just thinking, I guess if I would ask this, just a final question, kind of wrap things up, is I heard earlier about the blog, and I was just thinking that if you would write, I think when you say blog, I mean, that's kind of, you know, writing, but I think that if you could, would you consider writing your history, your history, you know, from just all your thoughts and everything that we've heard tonight? I think it would be, because very constructive. And it's just constructive, because it's kind of like a, when you talked about blueprint, I think that whatever I've heard tonight, it just seems like it could possibly be titled like, how my son became gay or homosexual or antisexual. I mean, it's just like the whole thread of the relationships, the ideas, everything is all there. It's all there. It's been laid out, like, you know, on a small scale with this program. But I think if you were to write just your history and it, all up till now, it's just like, boom, right there. It could, you know, you could see it, the result, the cause and effect. Would you consider writing
something that I think about?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Gus. Thank you for this program. It was very interesting.
One of the things. Hello, Gus.
Let me get this question from Mr. Reed, and then if you want to share, you know, you'll have time to do so. Mr. Scotty Reed, Black Talk Radio Network. He was on the program yesterday as well. Mr. Reed, did you have a question?
Greetings, Gus. Thanks for taking my call. I have more of a quick comment. I was going in and out the room, but I was trying to, you know, listen to everything. But I heard a commentary on Christianity, and it's not that I'm in disagreement with it, but it's all about messaging, you know, because I'm just trying to learn, and I credit this program for helping me, you know, learn that we have to unify and that many people are victims. And, you know, I'm still trying to get there to where I'm not blaming victims all the time, or not all the time, but some of the time, and just trying to get out of these bad habits. But I agree with what was said about Christianity, but there are useful things in it. Now, I was brought up as a Christian. I was brought up as a Christian, and one time I was a preacher. And some of the principles in there that I meditated on has really helped me do some things or solve some problems in my life. Now, I do understand that different texts, ancient texts, come from other places and been put into that Bible, and stuff has been left out. You know, as I matured and did studying and listening to people like yourself, I do understand that. But, you know, trying to bring somebody out of it, it's like trying to get them out of a cult, because that's what they are in. They're in a cult. And so I even, like, you know, have dealings with atheists and stuff. And I'm not an atheist. I believe there is something. I don't have all the answers. There is a spiritual realm. There are spiritual principles. And just because these people are atheists, why should I alienate myself from them when they're talking about black solidarity? Leave that religious stuff aside. But all I'm saying, brother, is that, well, I agree with you. We still need to be unified. All victims need to be unified. And I'm not saying you, but I have heard other programs where people were, you know, basically putting Christians down, calling them out their names, saying they were stupid for believing this or believing that, instead of trying to engage them in a conversation and saying, like, well, did you know that the virgin birth story was actually, you know, an Egyptian story that was in the Book of the Dead, and that there are other texts that also talk about the virgin birth story and that this isn't exclusive and these are older text than what's contained in the Bible. So all I'm saying is we have to ease them into it, and it's about messaging, you know, because we don't want to alienate anyone from the community. Thank you for this program, and thanks for taking my call, Gus.
And, Gus, that's one of the areas what I was saying is that, you know, with the model that I put out today, I could reach Gus if I get on my email address, is Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, J-O-E-M at gmail.com. Anything that I've talked about as far as religion, if you want to see the scriptures that I can show you in Christianity that support what I'm encouraging you about, it's there. And one of the other things that I talked to Gus about, one of the two things that the church supported that they don't support now is that two of the major causes that we have, one is mammon, which is materialism, and the other one is usury laws, which goes into the credit card companies with their crazy taxes and how the banks give money at 0% interest, but then they can charge us exorbitant interest amounts and make all this profit. So those are things that, like Mr. Reed was saying, the church supported these causes, but now they don't. So you have to fully understand how it has become a detriment to us. So, yes, when Martin Luther King was preaching liberation theology, yes, it worked for us. But now that they're preaching parking lot, now that they're preaching and they're talking about everybody need to have Benzes and big houses and stuff, that's to our detriment. It has not benefited us. So if you don't understand and have the perspective of saying, this book is a plan of how to control us, if you can't see it from that perspective, then sometimes you miss the point of how it works. And I'll give you an example. One paragraph, if you look at 2 Timothy 3:16 through 17, most people say that the Bible has, everybody has a different perspective, and it's your interpretation. But guess what? The Bible tells you that you can change it. So it's not that people have a different perspective. You are allowed, through the Bible, to change the verses as you see fit for your congregation. That, do you understand how powerful that is to know that as a pastor, if I want to change something, I can change it? There you go.
Hey, Gus, can I be heard?
2 Timothy 3, 16, 17.
Can I get one more question in, Gus?
Okay. Let's do one final question. We'll be back tomorrow. I don't know. Y'all can decide however you need.
All right.
I just wanted to clarify something. Earlier, you was basically saying that during you guys' private conversation, he said that that feeling in his stomach was possibly the creator. That's the term you used. Did he use that term?
Yeah, I mean, from a perspective of a person who believes in a higher power, the way I explained it is that when I was explaining to Gus the model, the key to life, as well as when you look at the circle and you go do a soul searching and you go inward, you can look at that inward being as a higher power. If you want to look at it that way, you can look at it as you being one with the universe, the earth. It is your interpretation of it. So remember, my teaching, what I wanted to provide was a universal teaching. So a lot of times I try to, as Mr. Reed say, give you the knowledge to where you are to help you understand it. So I would never say it's a God. But while I'm explaining it, if I say that inner being, you are the God that you are looking for. When you soul search and you become closer to your spirit, it makes you one with, i.e., your God, the universe, or just yourself, as well as your fellow man. So what you seek is inward, not outward.
So Gus didn't misspeak when he said, you said that it was possibly the creator. Like when he used that term, because terms are important, that's something that we focus on the cows. He wasn't mistaken when he said creator.
and referring to your comment.
And you are correct.
He wasn't mistaken.
Okay. And like I said, I just wanted to explain it. I would not say that, but let's say I have a lot of friends that's in church. So when I console them sometimes, a lot of times I use scriptures and I talk to them. So I would use that and say creator. It's weird. I know that I just, but it's weird. And it's because by nature, I'm a teacher. I always wanted to be a teacher. And through religion is where I wanted to teach and help people understand. So while I may not agree with God, I do think, like Mr. Reed said, that you can learn from any culture. So I look at things from a cultural standpoint instead of a religious standpoint. But you have to understand how the drug called Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, and the rest of them, it's used to control us.
Ruby, thank you, everybody, for calling in, and thanks to our guest, Joe from D.C. Appreciate you all taking some time out of your Thursday evening to speak with us. Hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. We certainly could have been doing other things, solving problems, because we have a plenty of them to get to. We will be back tomorrow evening. That would be Friday, March 9th, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Mr. Edward Williams will be making his fourth visit to the program. Before we wrap up, you want to give out your email address again, Joe, in case anyone wants to contact you?
Yes, it is A as in apple, R-O-N-J-O-E, M as in Mike, at gmail.com.
Okay. Right on. Feel free to...
M at gmail.com. I'm sorry, Gus.
Oh, no worries. Thank you again, sir, for sharing and calling into the program. I hope this was a constructive exchange for listeners. We'll be having a similar dialogue this Sunday. Cleo Monago, he'll be back on the program with Neely Fuller Jr. This Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, homosexuality and white supremacy. Should be a riveting exchange. With that, before we wrap up, again, the assignment, bring someone, one person who is a little bit more confused about racism, white supremacy for the Saturday compensatory call in, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. One person so we can get better at talking to folks, not being demeaning and disparaging when we talk to other victims who are still a little bit confused. Just bring one person and have them dial in. They don't have to be with you. They can dial in on their own. But just have them call in. It would be great. Get some practice at having constructive dialogue, even with non-white people who have not yet been informed about white supremacy, racism, because every single one of us has been in that position at some point. Get your person for this this Saturday's broadcast. Again, the T-shirts, it's on the blog, racism-notes.blogspot.com. You can see the shirt if you would like one, $20. That includes shipping. We're going to place the order on March 30th. And you heard the clip on Brandon White, one of the black males who said that he felt that we had been duped about the whole story about Brandon White being a victim of a hate crime. He's retracting his statement. He's giving a very lengthy explanation for why he's retracting. It's online. You can check it out, the site where it's posted. The title of the article is Activist Who Said He Felt Duped by Brandon White Now Backs Off His Accusations. And this is at the GAvoice.com. You can check it out. The title again is Activist Who Said He Felt Duped by Brandon White Now Backs Off His Accusations. We will be back tomorrow evening. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I will give our prayer before we conclude. This is from LBM. Again, if you have a prayer you'd like to submit, feel free. Write. You can email it to me, untiljustice@gmail.com. Our prayer to wrap up: to the creator of all things, big and small, help us, please, hear our call. Respect for the black family. Please help us restore a life free of racism. We need it. forevermore. Help us restore dignified lives in which we can be true husbands and wives. Great Creator, your help is in need. In our pathological ignorance, white identification, we continue to feed. Please help us identify those who are anti-human, or death and destruction will be forever looming. Help us repair and do what we must. Help us usher in a world that is just. We seem not to be getting it, not just yet. Help us remember our birthright and never forget. Help us to not forget the pain and suffering of our past, and remind us daily that for our children, white domination must not last. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.